Blog Talk Radio.
And not only at sports play, but also at the performers and the athletes that perform in these sports. And things get going around after the project gets through. Sports in Depth also is an in-depth look. And not only at sports, Sports in Depth also becomes sports in the world. And we start here. Our world begins here at Sports in Depth every Sunday, every show, where we go to the iconic John Coltrane. To lead us in prayer with his iconic, Dear Lord. Dear Lord, we thank you for another day. More importantly, have your will, have your way. We thank you, Lord, for little things you so largely take for granted. And more importantly, Lord, we ask you, your way be our way. We thank you, as the mother said, we woke up today clothed in our right mind, shoes in our feet, food in our belly. More importantly, thank you, Lord, your darling son Jesus, and with the cross that we may have the right to live life. We pay homage to you, the one and the only true God. We ask you to bless with all the blessings in your darling son Jesus, our Lord and Savior, Jesus, your darling son. In this prayer, in his name, we simply say, Amen. And the NCAA, well, action's hard and heavy. Kentucky pulls off a big win. UConn comes back at the Garden at home, beat Magic Johnson's old team. And so now they'll be part of the Final Four. Louisville is gone. Long live the king. The king is dead. Vic Pitino and his crew, signing out. The freshmen today, and that's something that John Barkley talked about, them stepping up and not playing like freshmen, them not realizing that they were freshmen. They didn't. Not since the Fab Five have we had seen this sort of display of talent. I always said, you can play. Experience at this place, but the talent can cover a whole lot of things. And today, it was victory for Kentucky, as they will now go to the Final Four. Look for a chance one more time to win a national champion. Back then, sponsored at Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. And as we close out Ladies Month, Women's Month, just once again, with Miles Davis bringing us in, want to once again salute the lady that was such an integral part in the civil rights movement, integral part in a lot of the benefits that we have today as African Americans and as Americans. I think too often people forget is that it's the African American who gained all the civil rights that benefited everybody. Like Kurt Flood, we were not looking just for our own people. We were looking for all people. And sadly enough, America doesn't look that way when it comes to us. The late Dr. King once said that America has given the Negro a bad check. And, wow. But now, let's take a minute. Let's pay homage to Ms. Rosa Parks. Neville Robbins. As we close out this Women's Month salute, and we salute our own, my beloved Mother Vivian, our incomparable Lady A, our mothers, our aunts, and Neville Brothers. Last time they'll salute this month, the iconic is Rosa Parks. Crew in here. They're beautiful, they're brilliant, all that and above. And also think that, without question, that great line, without others, two of them, somebody, and this is the crew. They're intelligent, intellect, not only in sports, but in society. They come from all walks of life, and I'm glad they walked into my life. And I always like to play that Magnificent Seven theme from the great movie, The Magnificent Seven, where they're magnificent people. They're doing beats. That great line that Jimmy Cannon once said about Joe Louis, every set of them. They are credit to their race. The human race. Third Philly, Sports and Death, Prime Talk Radio on the Trust and Carver Network. It's not Sports and Death. They're here. Lady A, Jumpside Jonesy, Lieutenant Bell 411, Lister. Daryl Bauer, Harold Weston Jr., Destino, H. Red Brown, G.W., Mike should be joining us. And, wow, there's just so much to talk about. It's just amazing how things happen. Over one, we said something that is so profound, which I know about a great lady. You know, she said the fallacy, that thing, if you can grow up to be what you want, you will grow up to be, she said, what you're destined to be. And it's just amazing, this whole scenario. And Cincinnati Seawings was on assignment last week, and want to bring him in first before we get Lady and the rest of the crew. It's just, you know, Vic comes to the Jets, Sanchez goes to the Eagles. And the mindset that was talked about a couple of weeks ago, that Sanchez, well, was felt by many, would be better in a West Coast offense. Now, I'm just trying to figure out, Mr. NFL 411, what do the Eagles see in him that they're going to bring him in, and why didn't they just keep Vic? I mean, I think Vic is the better quarterback. I mean, was the mindset here that the pressure was taken off the starting quarterback by not having Vic there? He passed the physical. I talked to you about some things, too. I thought that Sanchez would turn around and say, hey, okay, let's reconstruct my contract. This is the only organization I've been with. I got a chance here to be the starter again. I'm familiar with the system. I'm familiar with the coach.
God, I could have fucking went out and bought the food myself.
Wayne, what happened with that?
I mean, I just think that it was time with Michael Vick and the injuries that he's had. I mean, he was a tremendous player for the Eagles, for Andy Reid, giving them a chance when the other 31 other teams didn't even look at him. And he basically stood up and he made some amends for his transgressions, and, you know, after going to jail. And he turned his life around. But, I mean, with all the injuries and stuff, I mean, Michael Vick, it wasn't all of his fault. It was a lot to do with the offensive line not being able to protect him. Obviously, we know that
Here's the question. Let's go back. I mean, we talked about his transgressions. You know, he spent some jail time, and, you know, that whole dog thing I thought was just asinine. Roy Jones Jr. talked about that, too. I mean, he was implicated as being part of. But it's just amazing in this country that animals are seen so much more valuable than black people and even Latin people. I mean, I don't understand that, and I never will understand that. I'll never understand this feeling of so many people of this animosity, this hatred toward a human being. And he without sin cast the first stone. So I just thought that whole thing was another travesty of the Richard Price and the justice system is always just us. And when it doesn't work the way they think, it's infallible. There's some problems when it does. I'll never will concur with that. His transgressions, okay, but it's not like he killed him. I mean, people who get away with murder far easier than all that straight-up nonsense that he went through. But okay, you're talking about, okay, if the line could not, and I guess you're saying the line couldn't protect him because of his ability to scramble. So, but I'm thinking if that's the case, are they going to be that much better for Sanchez? Or has Sanchez relied himself to the fact that he's going to be a backup quarterback? And I, like I'm saying, I just thought he would want an opportunity again to be the number one quarterback here as opposed to going somewhere where he's going to be number two, then the mindset that he must think Philadelphia is a better football team than the Jets, correct?
Well, it's a two-pronged answer to that. I mean, you say Michael Vick, you know, he made the offense better in Philly. Mark Sanchez was looking for redemption here in New York. But the only chance, the only way you can get that if the teams wanted you there. So it's obvious that, and I believe that, I mean, you have to also look at the business aspect of it. I think that it was time for Sanchez to go. I mean, you know, having the first two seasons as a rookie quarterback with a rookie head coach and for them to be achieve the success they did back-to-back was, I believe, phenomenal. But as you see, the pieces started to crumble around him, and so did Sanchez. And the same thing with Geno Smith last year. He had no one to throw to. Who did he have to throw to? Holmes was hurt. I mean, you know, these are the and Ryan Clark brought that up on ESPN First Take about, you know, with everyone coming up with the, oh, Geno's not the man for the New York Jets. But he said, listen, give him a chance. When he had no one to throw to, the guy is new. I mean, anyone will fall to that. You could put Peyton Manning at center. You could put Tom Brady.
Hold on. What is it about New York that Peyton Manning just refused to come here? He had a chance to come here way back before he came. What is it about New York City, it seems, that Peyton Manning just, I mean, even with a chance to come here after the operation, what is it about New York as a Jet organization that Peyton Manning does not want to come to New York City, Wings?
It, you know, I can't get into the, you know, I could only speculate this.
Okay.
You know, just knowing that the type of, you know, family that he came from and, you know, with his father and his brother Eli and just that dynasty there. I mean, when you look at the New York Jets and how they make some personnel decisions, you look at Tebow, different things like that. And you know, we have to understand in this this cap era how, you know, you want to keep teams together and you can't. I mean, just for business purposes. But maybe his father spoke to him and said, listen, that just the way that they run things there in the organization on personnel and, you know, when John Idzik came in and the cap problems that he had last year, not being able, you know, with the cap problems and stuff, not being able to, you know, trade for some, you know, pretty decent free agents and things like that. So it's just, I think that has one big major factor to do with him not coming to New York the second time he went back to play for the Tennessee Volunteers.
How much does the refusal to come here have to do with the media? I mean, there are a lot of athletes who do not like coming to New York City. Terry Pillins, and I know, a friend of mine told me he took $500,000 less per year to go to the Atlanta Braves than to come to play for the Yankees, and it turned out really good for him. He won the batting championship and won the MVP award. But there are a horde of athletes. I talked to another player with the Baltimore Orioles. I'm not even going to mention. He said, just wouldn't want to play here.
I don't see that happening, Doc, with Peyton Manning. I mean, the guy is always a gentleman. He's cool and calm. I mean, just like El Capitan, Derek Jeter. I mean, always been calm. Doesn't let the media rattle him or the outspoken fans, to say the least, in New York. You know, one of the toughest places to play, not only with the media, but also the fans. But I don't see him being rattled by that.
I just think
that he went on the advice of his father the first time and also the second time. I mean, how much did it play the second time around? Who knows? I mean, he was a very seasoned quarterback the second time around. He knew that he can go to the best place where he would have the best chance
Could there have been a possibility, follow those best, could there have been a possibility of two that he didn't want to come in and be in the same town with his brother, maybe stealing some thunder or crowding the area? Could that be a remote possibility also?
I mean, that's always a possibility, but I mean, they both competitors. I mean, any time that they do play, it's a big deal. I mean, you have two big time quarterbacks. His brother having won one Super Bowl, Eli having won two with the New York Giants. I mean, that in itself, coming from the family that they come from, it's big news in itself. But, you know, that could always be a possibility. I just think that he just went off of just the advice of his father, or that played a significant role in where he wanted to go. And obviously Peyton's his own man as well. But, you know, having a father that he does have, of course, is going to play a significant role, and he's going to listen to what
Archie said that. That's the one thing he always wanted to be and pride himself as being a great father. Dr. Stanley Sposen at Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Network. Cincinnati Sea Wings, Representative Al Foreman, 1 hour football guru and genius in the sport. Anybody else want to jump in on this Peyton Manning or this football thing we're talking about, just jump right on in. We got the gang all here. It's just amazing how they flip-flop. He goes to Philly. Vic comes here. The other question has to be, and if anybody else wants to jump in here with some thoughts and ideas, please do. The other question has to be then, how long will it be before Vic's the starting quarterback? Wings?
We just have to see in training camp. I mean, he definitely has the experience. I also like Geno. Obviously, he's, you know, coming off of rookie year, but he got pretty hot in the last half of the season there, the last, you know, in late November, December. He has potential, but, you know, you can't beat the play style and experience of Michael Vick. He said he made it clear that he came here to start, and I think the right way to handle it, I think Rex Ryan will handle it the correct way and make it a quarterback competition. But I applaud John Idzik, New York Jets, on the decision to bring him here, because I think that was one of the reasons that Sanchez failed to accelerate and mature in the quarterback position, is because he didn't have anyone to have to look over his shoulder. He couldn't look at Bunnell. I mean, the guy wasn't really going to take a snap unless the Jets were up by 5 or 6 touchdowns.
Well, you know, in that sense, me and Lady talked about that all during Bunnell's time here. He was a season ticket holder with a uniform and a seat on the bench. And then one has to question, how serious are the Jets about winning? I mean, Sanchez was not coming out of college as one elite quarterback in college. So, we got to knock on the door, one game away from the Super Bowl his first 2 years. But you look back at his organization and you're saying, well, wow. I mean, how serious were they about going to the next level by not putting anybody behind them that was, first of all, competent and, first of all, could teach them? Now, we talk about this Vic move being a good move. But we got a question. What happened with Revis? What happened with Cromartie? I mean, he was a guy that's considered the best cornerback in all of football. Here's a guy you had a chance to get. And above all things, you had to stop this guy from going to New England. But, okay, so you lost that. You let Cromartie go too? I mean, this organization, like I told you, this is the only team that me and my late father, James, rooted for. In New York, and I didn't like the way they handled the Tebow situation, and this leaves a bad taste in my mouth too with the Revis situation, with the Cromartie situation, and now I'm hearing, and anybody can jump in here too, the thing with Jackson now. All of a sudden, these allegations have come up on him, and now everybody. There was a great line. I mean, what happened here? I mean, you're scarring this man. You're mocking the man. You're going to cut him loose, and then you're not going to use a paddle in the boat that you put him on the river on. I mean, but Philly has long been known as any organization, okay, that gives Dr. J a lifetime contract and then turns around with a new administration and tells Dr. J that, hey, we don't want you in our organization. Of all the good that Philly's done with Payless, Earl Monroe, and Julius playing there, I mean, it's just another organization that kind of seems to be low class. I mean, the Jets, this whole Tebow thing, this thing here with Darrell, the thing here with Cremonti, and now we look at this thing in Philly. I mean, how it's just, I'm questioning that. How do you cut the, you release the guy, and now all these stories come out. And I remember they did that with Iverson. You know, and Allen said, hey, and they had retired his number. Allen said, hey, whoa, you paid me to play basketball. And what I do when I leave here, as long as there's nothing detrimental to the organization, then let it be. Now, these are all allegations. And I remember there's a big story about the great Larry Bird. There's no question that there are a few greater players ever played the game. And Larry was known to hang out with some people that were supposed to be known felons, but that was Larry's business. But I just don't understand.
I mean,
well, I do understand.
It's just all allegations, and I read the article from NewJersey.com, and it's citing, you know, or sources stating that he had some sort of link to a what's the guy's name? Teron, Shakir.
He had some links to some bad people. Just a quick shout out. You know, Sports in Depth has been on here. You've been on there 3 or 4 years now, and we've heard worldwide. We thank everybody. But our number one listener in all the world, everybody, we want to say hello to Rosie and for those to Brazil. So everybody say hello to Rosie, please. Everybody say hi to Rosie.
Hey, Rosie.
Hello, Rosie.
How are you?
Yeah. She's our number one listener, a faithful listener, and she said she's learned a lot of English by listening to us, and we just want to really thank her for her faithful service and just really touched by it. But
these are all the speculations. I mean, he hasn't been...
I understand that, but my point is, if it's not... If it's speculation, the question that we know if it's speculation, but it puts a whole negative spin on everything. I mean, Jump Shot Jones, you jump in here too. The speculation, it's just, I don't know. It's the same old.
It sounds like it's innocent before proven guilty. That's what it sounds like. And you know, there have been many. African American athletes who have come under that scrutiny. Doc, let me just go back to Vic for a minute. You were speaking about Michael Vick, and Michael Vick is one hell of a playmaker. I mean, he is one of when he's on the football field, you know, things happen. Things happen sometimes positively, and sometimes not positively. But the one thing you're going to get a spark, your offense will get a spark with Michael Vick on the football field. Now, I think he's going to be a help to Geno Smith. He's coming in, he's saying the right things. I think they'll be able to work together. The thing that is going to, the question mark on Mike Vick right now, and he is a veteran quarterback, has always been turnovers. And that has been the Achilles heel of Michael Vick, no matter where he's been, whether it's been with the Falcons or whether it's been with the Eagles. But it was probably time for him to get out of Philadelphia. Philadelphia is committed to Nick Foles, bottom line. So Mike was not going to contend for that starting job in Philadelphia anymore. And it was just time for him to move on.
America, it's things don't change. O.J. Simpson was guilty of proven innocent, and once proven innocent, was still guilty. Lady A, you're sitting here. Your thoughts on these allegations against Deshaun?
I think sometimes things have a tendency to propel themselves in a negative light without people taking a look at everything all around. Sometimes I think people have a tendency to draw conclusions, but the reality is when you have an allegation, it's just that. It's an allegation until it actually comes to light. sometimes people have a tendency to jump on and say and make people guilty and not even know the whole circumstance or everything behind it. I mean, how many times haven't we seen that in sports? So, you know, I mean, I look at it from a different perspective. I think that sometimes, you know, people don't have a tendency to look at everything before they start making accusations. So, you know.
You bring a point to you bring, Anthony Mason talked about that too. He said, you know, these allegations will come up, and they'll be on the front page or the back page. And then when the retraction comes, when they're vindicated, when it's validated that there's a small article on page 17 near a commercial, Doc Stanley vindicated false. It's amazing. The allegations are just widespread and. And yet when the vindication comes and the validation that they are lies and the athlete is innocent, there's these very minute articles.
It's pretty much sensationalism sells, you know, and the reality is, like we said last week when we were joking around, nobody likes the truth, you know, but when you sensationalize things and you blow things up out of proportion, it sells. And, you know, reality being what it is, that's just society. People just don't like the truth. You know, if it's an allegation, it's just that. It should be deemed as just an allegation, you know? Yeah, but, you know, I think that's what it is, sensationalism sells. I mean, people want to hear these, oh, this guy did this and this guy. But it's alleged. It's not that he did. It's alleged. Until everything comes out and the facts comes out, then, you know, then it is what it is. But it's just an allegation. Allegation is an allegation, so...
The thing here is that the most important point is that the Philadelphia Eagles did not make any statement as to why he was cut. So this gang affiliation and different things like that, the LAPD said he was not involved in any type of criminality. Was he no association, or maybe he did know this guy, Teron Shapiro? That doesn't mean that he committed any acts of violence or murder. This is from the LAPD saying that. And also, you look at in 2012, there was a second gang-related killing that took place in front of a property that was rented by a relative of DeSean Jackson. And they found different items, I think a gun permit or a driver's license, some sort of documents around the location where this murder took place. But there was no evidence whatsoever that he was involved in this murder or anything like that. Also, they reached out, the LAPD reached out to the Philadelphia Eagles organization just to give them a courtesy that they were going to talk to him in regards to this, not that he was being questioned as a suspect, anything like that, from the 2012 shooting that took place in front of his relatives. I think it was either leased or rented property. And then the Philadelphia Eagles go on into the 2012 offseason and re-sign him, DeSean, for 5 years, $47 million. So whoever wrote this article, it appears that maybe they jumped the gun. Maybe there's a lot of speculation. And
I'm saying,
Doc,
sensationalism.
Off.
Like, come on. Like, there's no, you know, allegations are allegations. It's not anything that's concrete proof, you know. And I think that's what it is. A lot of times people, you know, if the guy hasn't been convicted or he hasn't been brought into a station house, then it's for a reason. They don't have any probable cause. What's the reason as to why they're actually doing all this?
Yeah, well, we know that. Where was
the allegations and the scrutiny when they offered him the 5-year, $47 million?
Jonesy, tremendous point. It seems like everything was all right. There was no problem. And it just, simply amazing. Simply amazing.
He's a sensational player. I mean, he's played in over 87 games, over 350 receptions career-wise, over 6,100 yards, 32 touchdowns. And remember, back in the 2010 season, his 65-yard punt return more or less ended the career of the kicker, Matt Dodge, from the New York Giants.
You know, Wings, I remember that game, and I remember when Deshaun ran it back, threw the ball into the stands, and I remember Coach Coughlin was on the field in that punt. And I remember at the press conference, and Bill, Michael Vick was saying that even the people on the Philadelphia team knew for sure they weren't going to kick the ball. And he says, wow, they're kicking the ball to Deshaun. He says, hey, that's on them. And they couldn't believe it. He dropped the kick,
remember?
But you know what? I think that is what really threw the timing off on the defense, because he dropped the ball, and for a split second or two, they didn't see him. And so that might have froze them, or it kind of just the timing. That's what Ali Sherman told me, which made Jerry Rice so great. He knew the pace of the game, and that took them off whatever pace they were on. And as we know, the rest, they say, is history. Again, let's take a quick break, because I want to come in here and say happy birthday. The 29th yesterday was the birthday of the only guard in the game of basketball you can utter in the same breath with all-around excellence at the guard position, able to shoot, pass, run, and defend, the one and only. And people forget, in that seventh game at Madison Square Garden, it was Walt Frazier with the 39 points, 17 assists. Willis Reed supplied the inspiration, but it was Walt Frazier that supplied the performance. So we want to say happy birthday to Walt Frazier. At the same time, on the 25th of the month, the lady who is regarded as the greatest listening voice of all time, none other than Cecil, she's a little sister, the one only legendary Miss Rita Franklin, and also our boxing scribe and friend, Jim Festa. So we just want to take a time out and say happy birthday. Clyde is a marvelous player, drafted number one by the Knicks at SIU, like Oscar Robertson, like Jerry West. He was a forward and came into the pros. Happy birthday, Clyde. Jimmy and Aretha. So Frazier came out of college as a forward, as did Oscar Robertson and Jerry West. People don't understand that Oscar Robertson and Jerry West were All-American forwards and came into the pros the next year and played the guard position. It just showed how fundamentally sound players were on that day. And when they selected the 35th anniversary all-time NBA basketball team, the starting backcourt was number 44, Zeke from Cabin Creek, and number 14, the Big O from Cincinnati, Oscar Palmer Robertson. But as far as the best all-around guard that ever played in this city and the best all-around guard that ever played in the game of basketball after Oscar Robertson, it's Clyde. If you throw somebody at him, he was a better defender than Magic Johnson, had a better jump shot. Isaiah, he was a better rebounder than Isaiah. Only Oscar was his superior as an all-around player. Just a great, great player, a very candid, honest guy, and played in the backcourt, in the greatest backcourt in the history of the game. Walt Clyde Frazier, number 10, and Earl Felt, number 15, combined to be number 25, and for fans, it definitely was Christmas every day to see those two great players. So we happy birthday to the great Walt Frazier. Back to what's happening here. Harold, you've been listening on this whole thing with Deshaun. Your thoughts?
Well, you know, I'm with the panel today, too. You know, people always want to convict a person without any, you know, any evidence or anything like that. I mean, the man is there to play ball. I mean, there are rules. But at the same time, you don't really have no sure evidence on anything about him, then leave it alone. Let him play his game, what he's good at, and let his career start flowing and see how great of a player he can be instead of always downing a person before they even get started, you know. I think we all got something in the closet that we can pull out, and it just amazes me how all these people media people, whoever, you know, owners, and they all got something in their closet. We did an investigation on everybody in the world. Everybody go to jail. But everybody that got something in their closet. Or they get divorced. Or they lose a girlfriend, all women, whatever it is. Something's going to happen. So my point is, it's just crazy how people just go to the length of life and just try to say, he did this, he's this, he's that, or she's that. I mean, it's just crazy. I think they just give him a shot and let him see how good of a player he really is. He stand up. As long as they ain't got no evidence, they should leave him alone. Let him play his ball.
You know, for a long time, you know, over the history of this country, you know, there's always been double and triple standards. There's been hypocrisy.
Richard Pryor always said, when you go down to jails and stuff, it's always, justice-wise, it's always just us. And Jump Shot, you bring a point in that's so valid. I remember reading an article maybe a half a decade ago where it said that an African-American who'd never been incarcerated and had a college degree had less of a job, a chance of getting a job equal to as his Caucasian counterpart who had been incarcerated and maybe had a high school education, could find a job so much quicker and so much easier. We talked about back in my days, the transit police officer was stunning. You were 33% of the job and 88% of the derelictions, which y'all today you'll call CDs. 88%. You're one-third of the job and you're over 85% of the administrative infliction of penalties, and the severity was always anywhere from 5 to 6 to 7 to 1. I think it's without question, and I've always said when you deal, the racism in America is so blatant and evident, and no more so than we deal in the military and military type of establishments, which is the police department and the Senate. I mean, it's staggering, and the minute number there. There are more Hispanics in the fire department than there are African Americans. Staggering. I mean, it's a minute number either way, but there are more Hispanics in the fire department than African Americans. And I go on this one time, I go over it again, and it's something that should never be forgotten. Is that the benefits, the civil rights awards and justification that all Americans receive was gotten by Abernathy, Hike, Farmer, King, Meredith, African Americans who were out there doing this, yes, for their people, but including all people. And it's just staggering to look at these figures, how they continue to shrink. There are less African-American players in baseball today than there were 20 years ago, and there were less then than there was 20 years before that. I mean, when Derek Jeter retires this year, and there will be, if I'm correct, only one black player on the Yankees, and that would be CC. Now, I remember the great Andre Dawson then playing with the Chicago Cubs, and he was on the bench. He said, whoa, and looked out on the field, said, where are the black players on the Mets? And on a day that Doc Gooden didn't pitch, Daryl Strawberry was the only African-American on the field. And how many African-American managers are there? I remember somebody was saying, Dusty was saying last week, well, you don't have to ask. Let me do our counterparts ask? The top athlete in every endeavor of this country, the most elitist, the greatest of all time, is 90% of the time an African-American. And I'm just befuddled by the fact that this fallacy of that, let's take this 252 hitter and he can be a better manager and the guy that got 3,000 hits, let's take this pitcher with a 4.2-something ERA and lost 200 games and 170 can be a better pitcher than Juan Marichal and Buckley. I'm stunned. Nobody's asked Juan Marichal to be a pitching coach? Uh-huh. Nobody's asked Juan Marichal to be a pitching coach? It's staggering. Where's Bob Gibson? 22-9 or one something here. They lowered the mound because of Bob Gibson. Where's Bob Gibson? Where's Juan Marichal? Where are they? It's staggering. It's staggering.
Doc, there's less African-American players. There's less African-American players now, too. You know that, right?
I said that. You're right. I was told 2 years ago. Yes. What's going on?
Yes, this is, I just wanted to just say, this is Alvin Johnson, and I don't know if you remember me, but I just wanted to shout out you.
Oh, yes, and, hey, how you doing?
And to Greg, and just tell everybody I love the show, and I'm going to listen to it as much as I possibly can, and just say keep up the good work, and keep counting out those statistics, too.
That's my presiding elder there. Presiding elder.
In fact, this is a young man who George Washington. For those of you who know the game, Lady A, George Washington, Harold knows him, was one of the great trainers in history of this game. It was George Washington who nurtured and brought to the forefront names like Riddick Big Daddy Bowe, who became one heavyweight champion of the world, Mark Breland, the greatest amateur fighter in history, boxing. One of the greatest amateur history boxing. Harold Weston talked about how he boxed with Mark to help him prepare for the Olympics. So, and you look back at the career of some of the great fighters. Okay, George Washington is one guy. We know Yank Durham was in the corner of Joe Frazier. I remember when Yank passed, and I asked the late great John Francis Xavier Condon, my godfather, really. Could he be on my show that week? He said he could. He said, I've got to be in Philly with Joe. I think Harold was down there, too, in the funeral when Yank Durham passed away. But it was so glad he he's from Bridge Street Church. That's
hey,
his church.
Listen,
also,
I want to ask one quick question.
Go ahead.
How is Doc Rivers doing since he left the Celtics? Because we know how the Celtics are doing.
It's amazing. It's amazing that you mentioned that because the Celtics, Doc didn't want to be part of, I believe, this rebuilding process, and it's just amazing. Now, nobody's talking about how horrible they're playing. Rivers became one of the few coaches to win a world championship with the Celtics. He went out to L.A., which turned out to be a whole better situation for him, as he not only is coach there, but he also, as Pat Riley, has also have some executive input. So things are working out for him. He's got a better team, as we can see. And one of the things I told everybody here, my feeling, was that Pierce and Garnett would have been a whole lot better fit with Doc in L.A., one, because he was their coach, and two, it was a better team, and they wouldn't have to be, as Mike Bellamy's cameraman said, they wouldn't be leaned on so much to perform. And as you see, the leaning has really gotten to Garnett. And Pearson is another one, injury-prone all year long. But Doc is doing well. Doc's going to do well. He's a respected person in the game, and he's done some very positive things. And like I said, he's won a world championship. And we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, the impact of Bill Russell. I mean, Bill Russell won 11 championships in 13 seasons. I don't think the Celtics have won any more than 5 championships since he left. Okay, so they won 16 world championships. That means when Bill Russell left, the Celtics only won 5 more world championships. Staggering. Russell won it 8 years in a row. Russell won the championship 8 years in a row, and until Jabbar and Chamberlain came along, he won MVP more than anybody else. But it's just it's a staggering number to think. And he only actually played 12 seasons because he got hurt 1 year. So in the 12 years that he played, he won the championship 11 times. The year he didn't win it, the greatest team in the history of the league, the Mercury at that time, 69-13, the Philadelphia 76ers dethroned him. So he won the NBA championship 11 out of 12 times and came out of college back-to-back NCAA champion. 13 championships in 14 years, but the staggering number is this, that the Celtics have only won 5 more world championships since Bill Russell left. And Doc Gooden is one of the coaches that won. He won. Tommy Heinsohn won. Casey Jones won. Bill Fitch won. So those are the 4 coaches who won the NBA championships after Russell won it in his last year as the player coach of the Boston Celtics. Doc Stanley, SportsNet Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. We're talking everything. Anybody in the panel want to jump in and throw in a thought, just say, hey, Doc, I'd like to shoot it in. Shumpshot Jones is here. We're talking about this situation with Jackson. I'm looking forward to snow soon. The New York Jets have two black quarterbacks. That never happened in New York City. Two black quarterbacks in New York City. There was an amazing stat the other day. The NCAA championship had some games played in the Garden, and they had a press conference where they saluted Oscar Palmer Robinson. And the salute was because Oscar Robinson still holds the record for most points scored in a collegiate game at Madison Square Garden. Oscar Robinson scored 56 points back in 1958 against Seton Hall. Now, you have to understand this. There was no clock then, okay? So you could hold the ball as long as you want. His 56 points was more than the entire Seton Hall team scored. Oscar had 56. Seton Hall had 44, okay? It's just and I say to this day, I don't think anybody will ever be a greater all-around player than Yvonne's husband, Barry's little brother, the one and only Oscar Palmer Robinson. We've got some NCAA basketball to talk about today. Kentucky is alive. Some of the number one seeds are gone. And
UConn.
We don't know.
Did UConn, my Huskies.
Well, I tell you what.
Please.
Hoopsa, okay, ladies and gentlemen, the Hoopsa's here. Hoopsa, let's talk about you. Hoopsa, do I detect a tone of bitterness here? What's happening, Hoopsa?
Yeah, man, yeah. My Louisville got bumped. My Michigan State got bumped, so I got nobody in the tournament now, man.
I thought you had Florida, man. What happened with Florida?
No,
Florida's still
Florida's
in it.
Florida's still in it. Florida's full of,
I thought
Florida.
You wanted Florida.
Yeah, I won. That was my pick. You know, I had in the pool, so I had Louisville and Michigan State. And, you know, Michigan State got beaten today, so we want to congratulate Kentucky. Them boys are big and young and strong. That's what they killed them on the board today. They got to give credit to Kentucky.
Well, Johnny, this is Whit Jr. calling from Pennsylvania. I just wanted to touch in on a couple of things with y'all real quick. I really enjoyed the show.
Thank you.
I was calling in. I wanted to talk a little bit about the Jackson situation real quick. I know y'all was talking about Louisville losing, and that kind of hurt my feelings because they're out. But we're moving on past that. The situation with the Jackson thing, I think the biggest issue that a lot of people are overlooking, it, more than anything, it was the timing of their decision. They knew for a while they were going to give it to Jackson. It was more financial than anything else. And what they did is they piggyback off of the fact that this article was being released, which is probably that's the worst part of the whole situation, is that they waited for the article to drop and then released it to say, listen, the money's not the issue. This is what our concern was. This is them justifying why we didn't want to pay them. So, I mean, that's the biggest issue that I think, you know, I have with them is just the way that they went about it. There was no tax involved. There was no professionalism involved. It was basically
It was typical Philadelphia, classless, low life, underhanded move. The point you bring up is so tremendous at the timing. That's all that means. What was that all about? And you knew what you were going to do from a business standpoint of view, because what I'm saying, what this did, it's causing. There's a scar here. I mean, it's amazing now to all the Jets, and I love the Jets, but I used to. But now they're talking about, well, they were looking at Deshaun, but now there are other wide receivers available. Okay, so you had your eye on the Mercedes, okay? You like that Mercedes, but also there are more Volvos available. Go ahead, my brother. Continue.
He's the best wide receiver out there available.
Period.
But you know, Wings and panel, Michael Ward, Gary Ward told me something that I'll never forget. And we were in the Yankee clubhouse. He said the Yankees want to win with a certain type of player, meaning white players. And that's America. America wants to win with a certain type of player. And they will use us when it's advantageous to them. But here's a staggering thought. When the Houston Astros won the World Series, what, 4 or 5 years ago, there was not one black player, Lady A. Understand this, Harold? Do you understand this, Jump Shot? There was not one black player Okay, I'm talking to you, Jonesy. I'm talking to you. There is not one black player on the roster. It's the 21st century. There wasn't a black player on the Houston Astros roster.
They don't want us to get too high. We got to remember, there's still that ceiling. It may be a little bit higher, but it's never going to be to the level that they have. So we, you know, right now, we apparently in the NFL, we've reached that ceiling. And so in order to bring things, you know, back to their quote-unquote order, you know, that's enough. We got to make sure we make an example of somebody and bring the attention back to who we want to be the stars.
That's a very valid point that you just raised there. You know, at the end of the day, when you look at the Eagles now, you have Nick Foles as your starting quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
Deshaun Johnson was cut. Michael Vick was let go. But Riley Cooper is still in uniform.
Right. Yeah,
I'm going to make a comparison to Othello real quick because I'm teaching that right now. See, in order for them to get to Deshaun Jackson to make that cut, they had to eliminate his buffers. His two buffers were Jason Avant and Michael Vick. So once those two players went, that was the end of it. You pretty much saw the writing on the wall because, quote unquote, and this is a direct quote from them, these were the only two players that were able to, quote unquote, reach him and keep him under wraps or keep him under control.
I mean, I'm always befuddled. Really, I'm not, by these things of the necessity to handle a person from a mental, a psychological standpoint of view. And yet, there was nobody more of a psycho than Ty Cobb. There was nobody who was hated more than Ty Cobb. There was nobody who nobody wanted to deal with like Ty Cobb. But yet, okay, when it came to induction, I mean, Ty Cobb purposely showed up late not to take the photo with the rest of the Hall of Famers. Purposely showed up late. Didn't want to take a photo with him. When you see a photo, Ty ain't there, okay? Hornace Wagner's there. Rufus there. Walter he wasn't there. And yet, the first guy voted into the Baseball Hall of Fame. It wasn't George Herman Roof.
No. It wasn't Walter Johnson.
It wasn't Hornace Wagner. It was Tyrus Raymond Cobb. Why? Because of his stats. But because, I mean, hey, I mean, America, we got no problem. It's like in the police department. As long as you're locking up and beating up black and Hispanics, you're doing police work. But you go the other way. Whoa, be careful. Be careful. Watch these numbers. And it's sad and touching, as Howard Weston would say. But you look at the cop situation. Let me tell you this. Base is loaded, two down. I got my cousin Bob Liebethay sitting there and my brother James across the other side. I got Ty Cobb. Ty's going to hit. I'm trying to win. I don't have to go out with Ty. We ain't got to. I'm trying to. Jackie Robinson, one of his greatest quotes, okay? Above all else, I hate to lose. Okay? I'm trying to win. And the thing that still bothers me, and I was talking about it today early with the renowned photographer P.J. Albert at my mother's house. The thing that still rubs me the wrong way, so still bothers me, was the refusal of the Dream Team to put Isaiah Thomas on that team. And I've always said this, that for as far as I'm concerned, that's not the Dream Team. And another small slight was, what was Chris Mullin doing there over Dominic Wilkins? What was Chris Mullin doing there over Dominic Wilkins? Okay, the only guy that was a non-African-American of merit, since it was not Larry Joe Bird, but what was Chris Mullin doing there over Dominic Wilkins and John Stockton over Isaiah Lloyd-Thomas? And the thing that I always look at is they say, well, you know, Isaiah was the leader of the Pistons. Yeah, but wasn't Chuck Daly the coach? Who was calling the plays? Who was giving instructions? So Isaiah, he's one of the generals, and you're treating him like he was chief of staff. Just sad and touching, but it's amazing how these things come up. When African-Americans speak up, or when African-Americans say, hey, we want these things done, it's not the right time. It's not the right time. And the bottom line is here, and it's like Jerry Ward told me, America wants to win as the Yankees do, with a certain type of player. Okay? And that player, they'd rather lose with the guys they want than win with the guys of color that they can win. I talked about the steroid issue. All my buddies here from the barbershop. And I'm not saying Alex Rodriguez was right, but I'm saying, was he any wronger than anybody else? But the thing that amazes me, which doesn't amaze me, is how come? Because Eddie Murray had told me way before we had talked that there was a list out, and he didn't name anybody. He said, but they're popular. But the thing that amazed me is how come when the names leaked, the only three names leaked, okay, Dave Ortiz, and nobody has been better with the media, baseball-wise and Boston-wise, than Big Poppy, Manny Ramirez. Who does Manny talk to this stuff to anybody? Alex Rodriguez. Now, it's just amazing. 102 names on that list. And the only names leaked were Minardi's. This is amazing. I mean, it was Gary Sheffield who said, it's amazing, he said, that nobody suspects that Roger Clemens is on steroids. And he said that way before this thing came out. He said, it's just amazing that nobody said, he said he rides the bike, he does that. Okay, when Mark McGwire hit the 62 home runs, the Maris family was there to salute him. Where were they at for Barry Bonds? Where were they at for Barry Lamar Bonds? And Barry has some stats that are just stacked. They're crazy. They're stupid. 231. I'm going to read some stats here if I find them about Barry that last year. 231 walks, 101 walks intentionally. The oldest man to win a batting title. He had a home daytime batting average that year of 400. He had a .380 batting average with runners in scoring position. But as often as things change, there are guys, you look at a coach, and Dusty Baker said that. They're talking about where the black man is. He said, somebody writes a story, but nobody does that. Because when I say, hey, Doc, you're calling the team. Okay, you know what? Fuddy is my bench manager. C Wings is my third base coach. Harold's going to be my bullpen coach. So that, you pick the guys who you want. I mean, it's your guys, and that's what happens when they come in. They pick the guys who they want. And this Jackson, the great word used there was the timing, and you knew the timing was something that was premeditated. And something that they did, and I'm just looking at the Jets. All of a sudden, what you said, Wayne, this is the best guy out there, but now all of a sudden there are other guys available. And we have to look at New York City. You know, New York City hasn't been that great when it comes to African-Americans. I mean, let's look at the fact. Wolf Frazier told me had Willis Reed not gotten hurt, he would not have emerged as the player he was. We've got an African-American president, and Yankees never remotely think about a black manager. Chris Chambers got fired as the world champion batting coach. How does that happen? But as Don King says, in America, we'll do some boxing in a minute, some other thoughts. Hey, don't move, gang. Let's take a quick break. Doc Stanley, sponsored at Block Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God the Network. We'll get back to football. We've got a good hour left. Let's talk a little about the sweet science. But let's not forget, March 8th, 1971. Carl was there. Oh, my goodness. Ollie Frazier won the greatest fight in the history of mankind. Smoking Joe Frazier. And this is the first time you had two undefeated guys who were heavyweight champion You had two, if I'm correct, it was the first time you had two Olympic gold medal champions in the ring. They came in undefeated, and it was an amazing night. The great late Leroy Neiman said it was the night of night. And Frazier, a 15-round unanimous decision. I thought Ali pulled it out. But anybody and everybody was there. And I'm just stunned by there's been very little mention. But a lot of it I can understand is because of the fact that there's no more Art Russ. There's no more Bill Gallo. There's no more Bill Clancy. There's no more Bert Sugar. Those guys of yesteryear, Vic Siegel, Ike Guinness, Louis Fisher, Georgie Benton, they're not around. But it's sad that the history of any venue, and I remember the 1997 All-Star Game, and a writer went to the great Oscar Palmer Robinson, and he told Oscar what was his feeling on the fact that today's basketball players, he said, are not cognizant of the pioneers and forerunners before him. And I don't know if his insinuation was that this high pompous African American players are not cognizant of the guys before them, or they were just maybe it's not as smart as athletes. And Oscar said, hold tight. Oscar said, no. Oscar said, look here, see how this works. He says, in today's society, nobody is cognizant of the pioneers before him. He said, it's a thing that's in vogue. He said, lawyers, doctors, painters, dentists, car mechanics, nobody today is cognizant of those who came before him. So don't just put this here on basketball players. And I just can't talk enough about Oscar when you realize he did so much for the players. The Oscar Robinson suit, Snuff said there. Boxing-wise, we had some fights last night. Got some fights coming up. His ankle is moving in. Bernard Hopkins is going to be fighting on the 19th with Kid Chocolate. He's fighting against the Russian champion who's coming in. That's going to be in April 19th at the D.C. Armory, Shamanus. I may be saying that wrong. Kid Chocolate, if he was wondering when he was going to fight, excuse me, gang, Triple G, but supposedly Triple G is going to be fighting Julio Chavez Jr. Mayweather has added to his card. Amir Khan is going to be on his card. And also,
Josh, don't forget also recently signed was Juan Manuel Marquez and Mike Alvarado going to be fighting on May 17th. And the Cotto Martinez fight is June 7th.
Uh-huh. Cotto
Martinez
right.
is June 7th
here at Madison Square Garden. And right. also on part of the undercard.
Adrian Broner is going to be fighting Carlos Molina on the undercard of Mayweather also.
Hey,
Muscles,
Bobby, what's up? How you doing?
Girl,
boy,
I didn't see you at the last press. What's up?
How you doing? Oh, my God. What you up to, Nene?
Yeah,
oh, my God.
And Muscles, the talk of the – and, well, you know, I'm sure I think next Saturday, Ray Leonard, Tommy Hearns, Evander Holyfield, Mike Tyson, Roberto Duran, we're going to get some information for you. They'll be out in Long
Roosevelt
Island
Field.
City. I got to get permission for that.
Long Island, but, Roosevelt Field.
Long Island,
Roosevelt Field. Yeah, the Steiner store, Roosevelt Field.
Oh, now, is that's going to be next
April 5th.
Saturday.
April 5th,
next Saturday. Yeah, all going to be signed autograph. Tyson, Holyfield, Duran, Leonard, and Tommy Hearns, and I'll come back and demand it. You're talking about this guy, Foster. You're my man. I think he may have a small punchitis sometimes, but I believe Foster fought the Jesus and lost. And you were saying that the Jesus, when he fought Duran the second time, was on the downhill side, but he fought Duran like about a year and a half later when he fought Roberto when he beat him in the rematch. And Foster did lose. If he's the same guy, he lost to Esteban wind up beating him. He said he was a lightweight. And like I said, and also, I want to cover your buddy, Ray Leonard. They have him. Hey, Ray is 51 years old now, Harold? 51, 52, something like that?
Ray's 57.
57, man. I mean,
he doesn't look a day over 30, Doc.
Wow, man.
Good. He's on the cover on the Sunday magazine today, Sunday paper.
Yeah, he looks good. Like I said, I didn't know about 135 Tavon Durant. And I tell you, Harold is another guy. Not only does Harold look good, Harold, I got the truth of that, you baby. But Harold let you know, boy, Harold can go gangster if need. Hey, listen, you ain't taking Harold's lunch money, baby. That's a question. Hey, Harold said, ain't no lunch money here, baby. Harold said, now, you want to donate a little something, I can swing it with you. But you're not getting another 25th sandwich. My goodness, boy. The great Harold Weston Jr. Boy, I got some sock. I can't support that, boy. I know. I tell you what, I'm going to say this. Harold could be on the West Coast and things would be running very smooth on the East Coast. Harold, I ain't going to say no more. Okay, Harold? Harold, I ain't going to say no more. Like I said, ain't nobody better at 135 than Roberto. I ain't saying no more. All I'm going to say about Harold, I'm going to say about Harold, too, what I've never forget was the fights that he put on at Madison Square Garden. I've never seen, and it's not because you were mad. There's four guys who were my guys as fighters. Four guys. Maybe Ali, Duran, Harold, Camacho, and Buddy McGregor. I've never seen. Don used to do it at one time. That's because of Duke. I think you and Duke did. I've never seen so many competitive fights and on a card. And Harold did this two times a month a year. And I just thank God so much for everything. And one of the things I do is all you people here that make me in sports endeavor, and to live in a lifetime where I saw the things at the old Felt. You know, Lady A, you would have loved it with your and you too, muscles with your boxing, both of your knowledge and intellect. It was just a place to be, and more than that, every 2 weeks there'd be a card there. And besides the great card, the thing that really was anybody and everybody was there. Joe would come up from Philly. Willie Pep would come down from Boston. Ray would come up from Washington. Emmanuel and Tommy would fly in from Detroit. I mean, I met Jersey Joe Walcott ringside of the fight. He was commissioner in Jersey. He's at the ringside of the fight. I met Willie Pep at the Garden. These were the things. It was a great time, a lost art. The great names, Tommy Kinville, John Condon, Harold Weston, I was really blessed for that. Hope G.W. Mike is going to join us. We've been trying to. G.W., did you get us yet? Okay, looking for G.W. to join us. We're talking some more boxing wars. Okay, so now, Cisco, we've got the Mayweather thing. What's happening with Bradley? We had the call the other day, Bradley and Pacquiao. Where do you see this going, Cisco? What's the next step? I think somehow that Bradley could lose this fight. I think Pacquiao has to win this fight. I think this is a detrimental crossroads fight. I may be wrong. You and Lady A, give me the. I think this is just a big win if Pacquiao wins, Cisco.
Well, somebody asked me the other day if I was interested in this fight with Pacquiao, and I told him no. I think he was surprised by that. But, you know, thinking about it, I think that Bradley's not only fighting Pacquiao, he's fighting the powers that be. If you look at that last fight, when he won that fight, he might as well have lost it because he didn't get to fight for a long time. He got death threats, he had it, and even his own promoter went against him and said quite a few things that weren't nice. Yeah, I think that he's going to, when he faced Pacquiao this time, I believe he could beat Pacquiao even better this time. I mean, he beat Marquez easily. He had that war with Provodnikov that showed how tough he is. I don't think Pacquiao could really knock him out. But I think that he's going to be dealing with a situation where the judges are going to be looking at the last fight and how Pacquiao supposedly was robbed. And if he wins the fight, that might be overturned by just trying to justify his win against Pacquiao. What was it, 2 years ago? Yep.
2 years, yeah, 2 years.
Exactly. So I think that unless you saw what happened with Marquez, right? Marquez had three fights with him, and got a draw in the first one and lost the next two. And he went and he knew that the only way to beat Pacquiao was to knock him out. He couldn't win a decision against him. So I think that Wiley's going to be dealing with that same situation. He's going to be dealing with a situation where no matter what he does, unless he totally dominates Pacquiao, if he doesn't get a knockout, he's going to lose on the judge's scorecard. And I really believe that might happen 2 weeks from now.
You know, Muscles, when we were talking about the fight and we were talking about Bradley, one of the things that stayed in my mind was the fact that he kept alluding to the fact that, I was injured, I was hurt. In the Piranha-Core fight, you saw that he had a concussion. To me, I don't even know how he was still standing because he had a concussion. And he was trying to speak, but you're trying to figure out what he was trying to say because it looked like his speech is very slurred. And in the interview last night that I saw with Bradley and Manny, I don't see Manny being as assertive, especially in the last fight with Rios. I mean, we all know that fight with Rios was a handpicked fight, but it just seemed to me that he didn't seem like he was there to finish him like he could. And to me, Harold says it all the time, you're in the ring, you should be able to finish a guy. I don't think that Pacquiao, he comes in with that mentality fighting Bradley. I think he's going to have to kill Bradley to beat him. Because I don't think Bradley's going to go away that softly, I think that Bradley's a much better fighter the last two fights. Originally when I was asked about, who I think is going to really win the fight, you hit it right on the head. I think that they're going to have to, beat each other up, really, pretty much in the ring to have it be a fair decision. Because overall, you're 100% right. I think it's going to be more where the judges are going to be looking at it like, oh, well, we basically gave the fight to Bradley last time. And I don't know if Pacquiao, him coming in with the mentality that he has, is really going to really be able to knock out Bradley like that. I'm just saying right off the bat. I mean, based on what you said, that's the conclusion I'm drawing. Am I right or am I wrong?
Yeah, he didn't look assertive in that interview. He seemed a little bit down for some reason. Where Timothy looks hungry. You see that he really wants this win. Pacquiao is talking about his hunger and that he still has hunger, and that's been the talk since the beginning of this press conference. I mean, the beginning of the fight tour and everything. Does Pacquiao still have the hunger? I don't even know if that's the right question. The point is that the guy still has it physically. He hasn't looked the same since destroying monsters like, Cotto and Margarito and Moji and stuff like that.
Right.
And now he's fighting smaller fighters, and he's not even scoring knockdowns. He did score a knockdown against Marquez, but it's like the tables have been turned. But I don't think he beats Timothy Bradley. I think Timothy Bradley beats him, but I think because of the powers that be, like Bob Arum and the judges and stuff, I think that may play a factor in him getting a controversial decision this time around. But the first time he was considered controversially for Marquez, for Pacquiao to have gotten the loss. This time, I think it's going to be the other way around. And it might be a third fight because, we all know that, it looks like there's no interest in fighting. I mean, there's no interest between Pacquiao and Floyd Mayweather to make this fight. But that would be a third fight. We'd be probably forced to watch a third fight between the two.
But have a third fight, then we Pacquiao has to win.
A what? Say it again.
I mean, to have a third fight, then Pacquiao has to win. So you're telling me, in this situation, it's a good win situation for Top Rank. Pacquiao wins, and then you do the rubber match. And like you said, because we're not going to see Mayweather Pacquiao. And Pacquiao,
Can I just say something too? Now, I just want to get Muscle's opinion too. Here's a big thing that has been in the back of my mind, and I don't know if a lot of other guys have felt the same way, is that I have a feeling, you know, to me, I felt, and this is my own opinion, I think Bradley always feels like, you know, people have really slept on him as a fighter. Like, I've always felt like he, like, when I see him fight, he's out there trying to prove something. But for some reason, he always wins. You know, it always seems to me like Bradley, when he's in there, and he said it in the fighter meetings when we were sitting down talking to him in the press conference, that, you know, he feels like he's not given his due respect, overall. And I think, like, somehow he finds a way to win every fight. And it could be ugly, it could be nice, but it just seems like he always finds a way to win. And, you know, going back to Pacquiao, you know, he really hasn't been that closer that, you know, I've really wanted to see him be lately, the last few fights. So I think that is significant. This fight is extremely significant for him in that fact that he really has to try to prove that he has that again. You know, Bradley also, which is important to him, because I think that this is the fight that, you know, he's being questioned about as far as him being that true champion that he says that he is, when everybody in the whole entire world knows that he was given that fight against Pacquiao.
GW Mike is finally got it. I guess he's finally coming across the bridge. Thank you, GW, for joining us finally. We'll pay your toll. Don't worry about it. And you said something, Adrian, and I think Al liked it too. And as I said, I got my Durant point. I think Bradley proved himself a lot in that tough fight against the Russian.
Right. Yeah.
So, I mean, the strange thing here is that I think the reality of the situation was in GW, Muscles can move it on here too. Lucy, Jonesy, and of course, if they have all one, don't go. We got some more football investment. The original situation I heard scenario was that he was really coming to Top Rank to fight Cotto. Cotto left Top Rank. And he came to Top Rank. As of now, he's the only undefeated guy out there, sort of at this level, along with Mayweather. So he's always said that he can beat Mayweather. He's the guy that's going to beat Mayweather. Now, the thing here is, that's not going to happen as long as he fights with Top Rank. But I think he proved his durability or his mettle. And, you know, Jonesy and Hoosier, the jumper, it worked. When he fought, I mean, the Russian guy was no joke. GW?
Yeah, no, that guy is going to be some of the future of boxing right there. But it's funny you were mentioning that. I was watching that fight the other night. And, you know, that guy is just going to get better with each fight. I think that's going to be the tipping of the iceberg for Bradley Sprit made him. And, you know, me personally, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I think that it's going to be an easy fight with Matt. I think he beats Pacquiao easy this fight. To be honest with you.
The thing here though is he's going to have to, and you would think after the controversial win that he's got to beat him. He's got to beat him conventionally. He's got to knock him out because
that's
it reminds
said,
me.
That's what I just said. I just said that. I just said that I feel he's going to have to knock him out.
Hey, Harold.
Yes.
Harold, I got a question for you real quick before I finish, because this is going to be part of your response. All right, now you've been in the pocket. You've been on the level of world-class fighters. You can probably appreciate this. All right? Now, if you notice when Bradley fought Pacquiao, you know there's a big difference between fighting a world-class fighter and fighting just a regular challenger. All right, you've been on that stage. All right, now, the bottom line is if you look at a man's legs and look where they are when they're cemented into the canvas and they're not nervous, you know that once they get past that point and they've been under the big bright lights and they get christened, their whole body, their whole demeanor, everything about them, their attitude, their swag, everything changes. The first 6 rounds of that Pacquiao fight, 7, 8, 9 rounds, the thing that I noticed, I don't think Bradley won that fight, but I noticed the 9th and 12th round, he was settled in more on his punches where he felt confident enough to fight with somebody at an elite level like that. And I think even more so, after getting beat up by that Russian kid, now, getting in there, the way he handled Marquez is a whole different element that we've seen. I think his confidence is oozing now that he can compete on that level. Now, did you see that? You know what I'm talking about when you see that in a fighter where their legs get more transitioned to, and did you know when you can see a bear in a man's legs? Do you agree with me on that?
Yeah, I agree with you 100% because you don't know, you know, when you go into that different world, and that's where it's a different world, that you know, you're competing against one of the greatest or one of the best. And when you can sustain and be as, all you want to do really be even with him. You can just be even with him, you feel great. But if you can surpass him, oh, it's another world for yourself. I mean, you're in heaven. But I think that Bradley is, he has hit a wall in a sense that he's not going to get any better. He's always going to be the same. Yes, he feels that he's equal to these guys, and I think the reason why he was in such a tough fight with the Russian kid is because he thought he was equal to him, and he didn't realize this guy was so strong and punched so hard. That's because he got his clock whacked in that fight.
Why is he not going to get better? Is that because he's reached the apex of his talent, or he's not going to get the kind of people to take him to the next level?
Well, he doesn't have people to take him to the next level. They don't have that knowledge to take him to the next level, and they can't.
And Harold, that's where it comes down to. Harold, you're 100% right. You know, I was talking to a fighter the other day who's a world, you know, I don't want to say a world class fighter, but fights on a championship level, and I'm going over combinations with this kid, and he's saying to me, "Oh, that's a nice combination. I've never fought more than an amateur. How am I talking to a middleweight champ? I mean, a middleweight about this?" And again, I won't want to put anybody on the spot, but I think that we're in a position right now where these guys got such talent. There's no trainers to show them.
You're saying something that Harold Weston and John Condon told me over 30-something years ago. I'm only 37, but I remember John coming from the old Gleason's, and he said, "Mel," he said, "there's a guy over there throwing a jab straight up in the air." He says, "Who throws a jab straight up?" He shook his head. And Harold came 20 minutes later and was shaking his head with the same thing. Trainers who have these diamonds in the rough and treat them like coal, it's a sad situation. And you said this for the longest time, Harold, and Lady A and Mike. The point is, and I've said this, it has a lot to do, you and Cisco and Mike and Lady, you don't give yourself a lot of, and our own Gilberto, JB, Ortiz, you people really know this game. It's sad and touching. It's sad and touching that y'all can't be in this game, but it's amazing that you sit ringside. I hear you talking, Lady. I hear you talking, Mike. Hey, Jill, Cisco. You see things at ringside that the guy sitting in their corner has never clue about. Go ahead, Lady.
What I was going to say is that this is exactly what we spoke about last week when we were talking about Danny Garcia. And Danny Garcia's father and Howard said, and Howard and Dusty both said, you know, he's not going to go any further if he doesn't get another trainer because his father's not going to, his father isn't going to be able to take him to our next level. That's
how
the same exact thing we talked about last week.
Lady A, how can he? And again, if you look at this situation right now, he fought a guy, that kid that he fought was a decent fighter. That kid that beat him, I mean, and again, Danny's a great kid. I think his father's an awesome guy. They've shown me nothing but love talking to them and stuff, but this is a business. This guy got beat last week, and he got beat by a guy that's just a regular good fighter. Imagine if he was ever fighting Harold.
But it's not even that, Mike, when you got a guy, Mike, like this guy that he was fighting Herrera last week, and all he was doing something basic, Mike. He was hitting him, and he was bringing the fight to him. He was bringing the fight to him, Mike. The guy had no answer. He had no answer. All he was doing was taking a step back, Mike, and resetting. It's trying to reset. But we said what? After the rest of the body wasn't working, what was his alternative plan? He had no other plan.
Lady A, the problem is, at the end of the day, if they don't know and you don't practice it in training, if the trainer doesn't know how to do it, they can't teach it. This is the bottom line. There's no answer. there's amateur coaches that know this stuff that are able to.
Mike, you cannot teach what you don't know. You can't teach what you don't know. And I remember, I'll never forget, if you all remember the Tito Trinidad Ricky Wright fight, after the end of the third round, nobody said a word in Tito's corner. Nobody had a clue what to do. Nobody said they was lost. Go ahead,
can I interject for a second?
Yes.
Now, you know, when it comes to Timothy Bradley, you know, people say he can't get better. I don't think he's gotten better. I think he's as good as we're gonna get. I think he's a good fighter. I've seen him in fights, you know, pretty much a dime, especially the Provodnikov fight where he was dropped twice and still was able to win a unanimous decision. Now, when he stepped on the scene, he was already considered an underdog. This guy was undefeated when he faced Junior Witter back in 2008.
Right.
And most people, he was another opponent. And what did he do?
Right.
He knocked Junior Witter and took the title from him. And he's been doing it ever since. And he's been fighting male fighters ever since he moved up in weight.
Mm.
As you recall, he beat Carlos Abuego, who actually beat Tomas Duroma, who fought last night. Huh? He first moved up to 147, and he beat the crap out of him. You understand?
Mm.
I mean, look at the names. Look at the names on his ledger. He got Edna Cherry, Kendall Holt, Nick Campbell, Lamont Peterson, Devon Alexander, Joel Casamayor, Manny Pacquiao, Ruslan Provodnikov. He's got name on his record. This guy's been fighting tough fights for a very long time and winning. And especially in fights like Kent Holt and Provodnikov, where he was dropped twice in those fights, he was able to adapt. You understand what I'm saying?
That's exactly what I'm saying. A lot of these fighters, you just said the key word, adapt. We were talking in a fight where Doc and I were talking to Doc. Was it Abel Sanchez he was talking to? And he was saying, right. And Doc was saying, wait, you got to be able to adapt based on whatever. You're not going to just go and stick with one plan. You know, and that's exactly what you're talking about with the Trinidad fight. It's the same exact concept. Once you're in there and you see something's not working, you got to be able to switch. Even Harris has said that in the past. You know, but you see these fighters, you can adapt and make your changes. You know, Marquez has done it. I see Marquez do it plenty of times. You know,
absolutely.
All these fighters, they've been able to do it and make the changes. You know, that's how you win the fights.
One thing that Bradley does have that I got to give him credit for, and again, I hope that his body allows him to keep up with it because his heart and his work ethic are unbelievable. I just think he needs a better training aspect of it, even though he did much better in the Marquez.
I don't really think so. I think that he, if you look at those two fights where he was dropped, he still won.
He definitely is tough. He's got heart. The problem with
Bradley is that when he falls away from his game plan and he tries to slug with guys, which he's not a puncher,
reckless.
He gets himself into situations like getting dropped by Provodnikov and getting dropped by Kendall Holt. You know, and he's dealing with guys that can punch.
Yeah,
you know, Provodnikov, you see, he's a puncher. He can take it. And he showed that he got a really good chin and that he's tough as nails. That guy right there, honestly, he's the guy that should have been fighting Floyd Mayweather in his next fight, not Mike Wanna.
Hey, guys, can I ask you, on another note, did anybody see that Sergey Kovalev fight last night?
I did. Oh, my God.
What do you guys think of
that fight? Listen, I think the funniest thing, let's just fast forward, man. The funniest thing I see is he was in the ring, right? And he's shooting shots, and I'm like, first of all, Mike, why was he leaning forward when he was fighting the guy, number one? You see him throwing the punches, and it looked like a couple of times I said, wait a minute, he's lunging to throw a punch. If this guy gets hit in the face, he's done. That's number one. Number two, the funniest thing at the end of the fight was when Max Kellerman said to him, asking his opinion about Adonis Stevenson, and he says, oh, I don't want to comment about him. And then he starts saying, in my opinion, Adonis Stevenson is a piece of shit. And I'm like, oh, my God. I could not believe
so
he said that. In my opinion, Adonis Stevenson is a piece of shit. All because he's talking about, like, not being able to, like, you know, to settle something for the both of them to fight. I thought it was hilarious.
That was hysterical.
No, I watched bits and pieces of it this morning. I didn't really get to analyze and watch the fight. What I was more interested in was the Kareem Mayfield fight with Tomas Delorme.
Delorme.
And I'll tell you this much. I like Delorme. I seen this kid Mayfield. He's a beast. I mean, he didn't look
real
like
good
that
fighter.
That beat Mauricio Herrera, who just beat or actually lost to Danny Garcia. Coming into this fight, I thought it was a dangerous fight for Delorme. You know what? He fought a very, very, very safe fight. You know,
he
was allowed to clinch, and when he clinched, he held on to this kid like if he was holding on, like if he was glued on his arms. I mean, I couldn't believe how a referee, Steve Smoker, warned him two or three times and still allowed them to clinch and hold on.
It was crazy too that you heard Robert Garcia in the corner telling him he looked like he was screaming at him and barking orders at him and telling him, listen, do not get into this guy, because he knew that if he took one shot from Mayfield, he was going to go down. And you know, he did exactly what he was supposed to do, which was try to keep him on the outside, because he knew before the inside fight he was going to get knocked out.
He's not a bad fighter.
Had two factors going into this fight that was working in his favor. One was his height. He had taller than his opponent, much taller than his opponent. Two was Mayfield hadn't fought in a year. You know what I mean? So Mayfield hasn't been that active. He looked really rusty last night. I thought it was going to be a closer fight than it was last night. I wouldn't be surprised if he scored a knockdown. He would take a punch. I mean, this is a kid who's got a reputation for roughing up guys like Manny Pacquiao, and actually roughed up. I heard Timothy Bradley and Danny Garcia in sparring. I heard this kid is an animal, and not even I heard. I've seen it around, you know, the internet. I've seen some of his fights. He knocked out. The kid has beaten like four or five undefeated fighters. You know what I mean?
Are you talking about Mayfield? Are you talking about Mayfield?
Yeah. No.
Mayfield, man. I had a couple of fights with him. I watched him knock out that kid in Albany. That kid's one of the most dangerous prospects I thought of.
Do you like him or you don't like him?
But that's why I was telling you guys. I was telling you guys that I feel like Delorme fought the fight he needed to fight. Because if he would have went inside and tried to muscle up around with this guy and try to fight a brawl, he'd have been knocked out. That's why Robert Garcia was yelling in the corner. Don't gotta go with this guy, you know.
Honestly, this kid thinks that he's gonna get a title chance. You know, he's moving up. He got an NBA title right now. But I think that. Honestly, he fights he's at 140. We still got Danny Garcia. We still got Voronikov. We still got guys that can play him there. I don't know if he can deal with those type of guys. If he didn't really see the deal.
Yeah, hold on just a minute. Let's take a quick break. We'll be right back. That's only 4th Blog Talk Radio on the Trusted God Radio Network. Stanley Sports Def Blog Talk Radio on the Trusted God Network. My panel, Sports Def, not only give you an in-depth look at the sports that are played, but the athletes and the performers of the sports. And my panel, with that diverse intellect and acknowledgement of all society, Sports Def 2 often turns into the world in depth. Doc Stanley, Sports Def on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Jump shot, get back to you for a minute or two. Who's going to win this whole thing now? You're down to four teams. Who wins it all? Are they losing?
I'm here, Doc.
Okay, yeah, jump shot. Okay, jump shot. But we're
looking this could be a Florida year again. I mean, I'm rooting for UConn with Kevin Ollie. My wife's from Wisconsin, so...
You know, I'm rooting for Wisconsin also. But if I'm just looking at it from a basketball standpoint, I think this may be another Florida year. I hope I'm not right. But, this team plays fundamental. They're fundamentally sound. They're playing with, I think, four seniors. And they're very fundamentally sound team. So it could be a gated year.
Okay, Judgy, getting back here to New York City, we know the Nets are going to make the playoffs. And there was something, Mike Bellamy, you hope he had joined, if he didn't join us, on his show the other day, I got a gentleman's name, and he made a very, just a very intellectual and a very tremendous point. He says the elevation of New York City basketball, the centerpiece has been Jason Kidd. Jason Kidd took the Nets to back-to-back NBA Finals. It was Jason Kidd last year who was an integral part of that outstanding New York Knickerbocker team. And it's Jason Kidd as the coach of the Nets that, I mean, the Nets have been playing the best basketball in the second half of the NBA than anybody else. They're going to make the playoffs, which is something that used to be a foregone conclusion that wouldn't happen. And they've got a shot at the division title. How much credit do you give to Jason Kidd, and can the Nets win the division? I mean, they're going to make the playoffs. They've got a shot. Jason Kidd, as it was said here, he's been an integral part of the success of New York City basketball, definitely the last 2 years. Jump shot?
I would agree to a certain point. I mean, Jason Kidd is a winner, and he plays the game. I mean, the one thing about Jason Kidd, you know, he's always been what we call a coach on the floor. He's a winner. You look at Jason Kidd's playing record, and he's a winner more times than not. So I would agree with part of that. He brings a winning mentality to the court. He knows how to get other players involved. And, you're talking about a guy who's a future Hall of Famer. So he knows how to win. May not be the year that they win the division because the dark horse has been Toronto, and Coach Casey, I'm sorry, has done, he's done a great job up there in Toronto, and really no one's talking about the Raptors this year, I guess, because they play in another country. So this probably will not be the year they win the division. Let's see what happens in the first round of the playoffs. Let's see what happens there with the Nets. They are the best team in basketball in New York City right now. So, let's see what happens right now. They won today. They beat the Wolves. They have about 7 to 8 games left in the season. And let's see what they finish in terms of their seeding in the Eastern Conference.
And here's the question, too, now. Real quickly, let me get are the Knicks going to make the playoffs?
My heart says yes. The standings say no.
Lady
They're
A?
Fighting right now.
Well, I was just going to throw in the mix, too. I mean, just correct me if I'm wrong. I mean, you guys are basketball guys. I mean, I haven't been into it as much. But my thing didn't Jason Kidd also play in a team that went to the finals with Thomas, with Jackson, Kenyon Martin, and all those guys in the early 2000s also?
Yeah, the Nets lost back to back to the Lakers. That's correct.
But he was on those teams, right?
Huh? Yeah,
he was on that New Jersey Nets team.
He was on both of those teams that went to the finals. Yeah, he was both of those teams.
Okay.
In fact, the first year he should have won the MVP. They screwed it. I'm just amazed at how New York writers go against New York athletes. There was a guy. Well, Ryder was tough. He had all the reasons why that Tim Duncan should have won over Jason. Nobody thought the Nets were going to make the playoffs, more or less make it to the NBA Finals. Cincinnati, T-Wood, you had something to say about basketball for us?
No, I was saying that the Knicks battling Golden State in they're up in the fourth quarter. It's about a little less than 4 minutes to go. So they're up by 6, 81-75.
Mm-hmm. But,
But I wanted to ask you something, Doc. Do you think that a team like San Antonio with the best record in the NBA, the longest win streak, 17 straight games, do you think they get undercovered by the media, or do you think that's the way the organization works?
Well, you have to understand that there's two things here. They're not L.A., New York is the two biggest markets, New York, L.A. Okay, so they're not big market teams. They're kind of a quiet team. They remind me for teams, they've won a few championships. Tim Duncan is our question of one of the greatest players ever played this game. And Tony Parker has shown me he's one of the most accomplished elite guards. I hate to use point guards that play this game. They have to have an outstanding coach. But then they're a very good basketball. It's not hard to coach that team. A coach more so has to adjust the personalities than he does have to play. Players can play. They always try to make you think that coaches make you play. When I go to the plate, I'm not trying to hit a three grounder to Ozzie Smith. I'm trying to get a base hit into the outfield. So nobody's going to the plate to make out, and nobody's trying to miss a jump shot from the top of the key to screw your coach. They're not a big market team, and they're not a team of a lot of names. It's amazing. You get one big name on a team, everybody knows that team. Pistol Pete, Dr. J, Larry Bird, Magic Johnson, Kareem, Michael Jordan. One big name. Even when Michael left that year, you still had Scottie to fill that void of a star. Duncan is a great player, but he doesn't seem to have the star power that other players have. George Gervin
has
more
star power.
Well,
he is a superstar, but I think he's the type of guy that cruises along. He doesn't, like you said, not a lot of flair.
Okay.
But
yeah,
I mean,
right.
I think even when he ultimately, I think, retires, and I think about maybe another 2 years, I don't think he wants a big fanfare. He's just going to go out nice and gradual. But he is probably the most boring superstar to watch in the NBA today. But the guy cruises along. I mean, at the age of this team, and they still manage to, go along and win. I mean, 17 straight. I mean, they just fly under the radar.
Wings, is that when a team does face, the players in the league know how good they are. You know, we as athletes playing against each other, we know all about each other. But it's the media, and they – not the media, but the fans, and they shock the fans a lot. So everybody knows how good they are. Everybody knows how tough they are. It was you were there. It's just amazing how they lost that game last year. Everybody knows how good they are. But they kind of – Julius Erving told me something. I'm saying Julius. You say Julius. I remember when the leagues merged, and I asked Julius, who's going to be the player that's going – to wow the NBA fans when you guys merge. And they said they know about me and know about George, me and George McGinnis. Remember, McGinnis at that time was playing with the Sixers. He had led all forwards in scoring in the NBA. He said, but Ice's guy that's going to surprise him. See, because the players know who can play, who can't play. Boxers know who can fight, who can't fight. The players know, but it's the fans and also a lot of the media who don't project and push guys out. So the players know how good San Antonio is. Okay, the coaches know how good San Antonio is. But it's the fans.
That's the team right there to win the whole thing. You know that right there,
And the thing is, though, now the key to San Antonio, as we go toward the playoffs, is to stay hot and stay healthy. Okay?
Yep.
Stay hot, stay healthy. That's the big two. Stay hot, stay healthy. Gang, nobody move right now. We're going to do so we can do it in time. I'm going to do a little quick hit, so Liz, they've been cutting, so if they do it, we'll be there. Doc Sandy, Sportsnet Blog Talk Radio on the Touch and Guardian Network. I'm going to slide this into my, and I love this song here to take us to
it. Just tied it up, Doc. Golden State. Steph Curry hit a three-pointer with 2:41 to go in the fourth quarter. They both tied up at 81.
And there's a guy that should be here coaching, and there's no question in my mind what a great coach he is. Mark Jackson. Doc Sandy, Sportsnet Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardian Network. We're going to run away and then run in to Mike on Lights Off. And we do that always with Eric Bonet. Running. Doc Sandy, Sportsnet Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Guardian Network. The gang's all here. GW, Double Brown, 88, the Hoopster, Jumpside Jonesy, and Bell 411. That's your round. Leave your feet thoughts. Eric. I told him we're going to do this. Live your life today. It is as simple for God tomorrow. Why is it most persistent? The most urgent question is, what are you doing for others? Service to others. You meant to pay for your space here on earth. And Marvin Gaye is going to have his say, and then we're going to do Mike on the lights off. Ladies and gentlemen, the late great Marvin Gaye. Marvin?
I tried to tell myself that it was just a game. I just want to ask a question.
Can't go move because we're going to do Mike on lights off. So everybody, but don't move a muscle. Marvin, go ahead. You got it.
Save the world in despair. Who really cares? There'll come a time.
There'll come a time
when the world won't be singing.
When the world won't be singing.
Flowers won't grow.
Flowers won't grow. No.
Bells won't be ringing.
No bells won't be ringing.
Who really cares?
Who really cares?
Who's willing to try?
Who is willing to try?
To save a world.
To save a world.
That's destined to die.
That is destined to die.
When I look at the world.
When I look at the world.
It fills me with sorrow.
It fills me with sorrow.
Little children today.
Children today.
Really gonna suffer tomorrow.
Really suffer tomorrow.
Oh, what a shame.
What a shame.
Such a bad way to
such
live.
Such a bad way to live.
Oh, who is to blame?
Who is to blame?
We can't stop
when
living.
When we can't stop living. Oh, oh.
Live.
Live.
Live for life.
Live for life. Live life for the children.
Live life for the children. Oh, for the children.
You see, let's save the children. Let's save all the children.
Save the babies. Save the babies. And if you want to live,
and now, as we wore it out, force and death, we're going to run into force and death. Take on, lights off. And with that, I want to come in real quick. Some of what we talked about, NCAA Championship, getting down to the Final Four. And we also, once again, want to say happy birthday to Walt Clyde Frazier, the 29th, and Aretha Franklin, who had a birthday on the 25th. Princess, Derek Jeter, where number two is quite apropos. And he will be the last single-digit number ever retired by the Yankees. I mean, he's second to none. Second to none as a player, as a person. He's everything that Joe DiMaggio was supposed to be, everything Mickey Mantle wasn't. A real live American hero. And he accomplished things that neither one of them did. No Yankees. Joe, Babe, Garrick, Mantle got 3,000 hits. And Jeter is the only Yankee to ever win the All-Star Game MVP. He's the all-time stolen base leader in the history of the Yankees, and he'll be the last single-digit number ever retired. Number one, Billy Martin. Number two, Derek Jeter. Number three, Babe Ruth. Number four, Lou Gehrig. Number five, Joseph Paul DiMaggio. Number seven, Mickey Mantle. Number six, Joe Torre. Number eight, Yankee Berra, Yogi Berra, and Bill Dickey. Number nine, Roger Maris. Maris, two-time MVP, 61 home runs. Berra, three-time MVP. Mickey Mantle, three-time MVP. Joe Torre. Forgive me, Ken. One of the great winning managers in Yankee history. Number five, Joseph Paul DiMaggio, 56-game hitting streak. The first man ever to win MVP three times. Lou Gehrig, the first player ever to have his number retired by the Yankees. And as you know, until along came Cal Ripken, had the streak for most games. And had he not died, he definitely would have got 3,000 hits and 500 home runs. Number three, George Herman Root, lifetime 342 hitter, 714 home runs, and is considered, without question, one of the greatest players, greatest home run hitters of all time. Number two, Derek Sanderson Cheetah, second to none as a person, as a player. Everything Joe DiMaggio was supposed to be, everything Mickey Mantle was, a real live American hero. Great human being. And number one, Billy Martin. And with that, let's move into, as we go into, what's the depth? Mic on, lights off, and we'll be going in. Well, they cut us off. Doc Philly, what's that? Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. And once again, I said we talked about the pitches. Jeter's there. Floyd Mayweather's there. Ollie Frazier. Never forget, Ollie Frazier, Juanete, Roberto, and Esteban de Jesus, two of the great lightweight champions of all time. There's a picture. Hey, yours truly, Harold Weston Jr., and that's the NFL 411. And the team that didn't make it out of Louisville, Big Patino, and his Louisville team. Troy Pretty Boy Mayweather is there. As we close out Women's Month for the great African-American women of our time, Shirley Chisholm, Dorothy Height, and Toni Morrison, and Barbara Jordan. Some of those pictures. Derek Jeter is there, of course. And now, with further ado, gang, let's let Miles Davis bring us in to Mike Vaughn. Lights off. As I said, the pictures, Mayweather is there. Mr. NFL 411 with double barrel howl, and the doctor is there. Derek Sanderson Jeter is there. We got a picture of Floyd Pretty Boy Mayweather, World Pride Ranger, who celebrated a birthday. This is one of the photos in our monologue of pictures. We told the African American women, Dorothy Height, Barbara Jordan, Toni Morrison, and Shirley Chisholm, the first African American to run for the presidency of the United States, Ms. Chisholm from Brooklyn. Some of the pictures that are in there, we hope you enjoy the monologue. Michael Vick is there, Geno Smith is there, Mark Sanchez is there. What a flip-flop there. Sanchez in the Philly, Vick in New York City. Geno, who says he's number one and wants to prove it. Time will tell. Ollie Frazier, no one needs to be said. Two great heavyweights of all time. Joe Frazier only lost four fights, twice Ollie and twice to George Foreman. Hey, I guess it's time to stop talking. Miles Dewey Davis, probably the greatest quintet in jazz history. John Coltrane on tenor sax. Philly Joe Jones on drums. Paul Chambers on bass. Red Garland on the piano. Miles Dewey Davis on the trumpet. Doc Dilly, what's that? Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Network. Is mic on, lights off. Okay, gang, we're here. We're going to roll, so they cut us, so they slide us. We've got the First Lady. Harold has left, but we still got double mic, life us, love us. Josie, real quickly, who do you see as the MVP in the NBA this year?
Kevin Durant. Kevin Durant. I think he finally has done enough to unseat the incumbent, Mr. LeBron King James.
Mm-hmm. Lady A, you got a thought on NBA MVP?
I really can't comment just because I haven't really seen as many games with him playing as I guess I should, but I think it's probably going to come down to KG and LeBron. But I don't think the Heat the last few weeks are really playing all that well. So we'll see. I think Kevin overall has been scoring more than him too. So it should be him if you ask me. You know?
Mm-hmm. Muscles, boxing man, you got a thought on the MVP and the NBA?
Do I have a thought on it?
Yeah.
I don't even have a clue.
I guess. Hey, muscles. Does that mean no?
That means no with a capital M, got
you. That's Daddy. The GW left us, so okay, we still got the. They were in the studio, but Lady
A. I see the LeBron's name up there. Is LeBron even in that category?
I think he's running, but.
Okay, well, Mr. Neville, 411, you follow basketball. Who do you think the MVP is? You think it's the man from Motor City?
I'm going. Either it's going to be a toss up between Kevin Durant and LeBron James. I still think LeBron, even though they've struggled in the last couple of games, he's just phenomenal. Best player on the planet at this point. I'm going to go with LeBron James again. I've seen some games where Kevin Durant played and he's still not there. I mean, he's putting up a lot of points. I still don't think he's going to unseat LeBron James this year. I mean, LeBron has just been phenomenal. Obviously, they struggled in the last couple of games, but Yeah, Miami did that last year. They always seem to turn it up when the playoffs come. I still think it's going to be Miami and San Antonio again in the finals.
Doc, I just want to inject this into the conversation if I can. I mean, I know, like I said, I haven't really seen Kevin play that many games, but I will say that one of the things I know is that his contract's supposed to be up like after next season. Am I correct? Is there still speculation that he may stay with Oklahoma, or is it that he may leave?
But your thought's good as mine. I think him staying with Oklahoma, a lot has to do is how far they go in the playoffs. If they get to the final, if they win, I think winning somehow he's got a good team. Unless you're going to go to another good team, that's the thing about free. It's been amazing what free agency would have been like back in the day. If Willie Mays would have left the Giants and went to the Cardinals or went to the Yankees and vice versa, it'd been really amazing, even basketball wise. I mean, because Oscar didn't go to the Bucks because out of the fact he was just traded to the Bucks. But it was amazing what free agency would have been like in the days of some of the really legendary immortal players. You just never know what turns a guy. Earl,
you know,
the great
funny,
Earl from Earl.
Funny. I was going to say, it's funny, like in a lot of the big three sports, like you have, you know, all, you know, MVP and, you know, they give all these honors, you know, based on points. But it's a shame that, like boxing can't be more, you know, set up that way, you know, because everybody always talks about Floyd Mayweather and all the money he makes and what he's generated. But, you know, if these two promoters would finally just end their bitter feud and allow it to, like, the fighters, the best fighters to fight, you know, you probably would come up to some probably fighter of
it's sad and touching, but I think it has basically always been this way. And one of the problems is that the Madison Square Garden is no longer a stronghold. I mean, that's the thing. I think years ago, you could go to the Garden. It's like Harold would say, it's sad and touching that these things are not happening. And then you don't have I think what we're going to do next week, we're going
to
have
to interject real quick, the Knicks won 89-84. It puts them one game behind the Atlanta Hawks. The next game the Knicks play is at Utah, who lost tonight against OKC 116-96. And the Atlanta Hawks, their next game is against the Philadelphia 76ers, who did they break the record for the
the longest
No, they inverted. You know, it's amazing. And ladies and gentlemen, I said it's Super Schwarzenegger. Everything you need to know is right here. These people are just the greatest. And it's amazing that the Knicks are still in it. It's really, really amazing. They lost that game to the Sixers, which meant had they beat the Sixers right now, they'd be tied with Atlanta. They'd been tied, but they're one game back.
They should have beat the Cavaliers and the Lakers, and they would have been up.
Well, I'm just talking about the game against Philly. The Philly game, the Cavalier game, that's the game part I'm looking at, too. The Cavalier game. That's sad. I mean, at home, up by, but see, what I thought in that game, Lady A, Muscles, C-411, was that I never, with the necessity of needing every game, I didn't understand. Melo was hitting six. Why did Woodson pull his regulars out? Run these guys. You got to win. Go with the hot hand. If you're up by 22, be up by 32. One of the great lines, I remember, just a minute, gang. Everybody move. It was a champagne celebration after the Yankees had won the division again. Somebody asked Derek Jeter, does that winning get on? Derek said it never gets old. I remember the great line. The legendary stickball player, Melly Mays, and then Billy Bang Bang, what a great such hitter. The great Edgar L. Fuzzy Bartlett. And they said one thing about, I mean, Billy talked about coming down the street one day, and Melly's going, yeah, come on, score, score. And Bang turned to Melly and said, well, Melly, what's the score? 17-2. I said, man, you're really down. I said, no, we're up 17-2. Love a good slay. You have to beat the team you're supposed to beat. And I don't understand Woodson taking out his players. At this time of the year, there's no time for rest. And I never understood this tiredness of basketball players with the horde of timeouts, with your timeouts, their timeouts, the TV timeouts. The guys are just with the love of the game and the money that you play. But I thought the vital turning point in that game was when he got up big. He rested his players. He shouldn't have done it. And right now, they would be tied. I think they've got a really good chance to overtake them. And we'll see. But the key to the playoffs is, like I said, and Lady A concurred, staying hot and staying healthy. And a team like the Knicks could be dangerous. Say they roll off 8 straight wins. They could be dangerous because they're going to be in the road. And that's what helped the Giants when they went to the Super Bowl, playing on the road. Jesse Barfield told me that there's the great Jesse Barfield, the only African-American to lead the league in home runs for a foreign team. And, yes, in the Doc Stanley, Trust in God, Sports and Depth, Entertainment, Artifacts, Hall of Fame, we have an autographed Jesse Barfield bat along with one of his gold gloves. And Jesse said the road is better for you because there's no distractions. You know, your uncle's not calling for tickets, okay? You have to be home this afternoon. You can focus, and the team can get together. And that, I think, was the vital part. I think Jerry Reese would agree, the great GM and senior vice president of the Giants. Yeah. But that was a great team, that the Giants were on the road. So you're focused. It's us against the world. You know it's the anti-sentiment against you. And that could be advantageous. Staying healthy and staying focused could be a real big key. Real big key here.
Hey, Doc.
Yeah.
The Knicks are not going to win a game, more than likely, in a best 4 out of 7 against either Miami or Indiana. It's all just to get 2 playoff home games. That's it. The 8th spot, forget about it. As we say in Brooklyn, forget about it.
As Marvin Gaye once say, they won't be doggone. They'll be locked.
Hey, Doc, just wanted to say on behalf of the Sports in Depth panel and Sports in Depth Nation, our prayers and deepest condolences go out to the Buffalo Bills fan base and to the team on the loss of their owner, Ralph Wilson, who died last week at the age of 95. Who was also the second longest tenured NFL team owner, only second behind George Halas, who owned the Bears for 63 years.
Wow.
Mr. Wilson owned the Bills for 54 years. And also our prayers go out to the Buffalo Bills fans and the team and the family of Jim Kelly, Hall of Fame quarterback, whose number 12 was the only number retired by the Bills, who's battling oral cancer, which has come back, and he has to undergo surgery to try to combat that. So prayers and go out to a speedy and full recovery to Jim, and who took the last NFL team to 4 straight Super Bowls, even though he didn't win. But that was, you know, the last team to do something.
Jim Kelly, I remember he played in that old World League. And as we talk again, once again, just blessed by the good Lord, looking into the one of the best areas of the Trust in God Sports Entertainment Artifacts Hall of Fame Museum. There's a gorgeous picture of me and Jim Kelly. They had an ESPN affair, and me and him doing some little mic posing, and great quarterback. And one of the great players in the history of this game. And at the same time, on behalf of our all the panel here, starting off with our director of boxing, Lady A, we again send sympathy wishes out to Lou DiBella, who the week before last lost his dad. We always want to send salutations to Kevin Rooney Jr. for just a great job that he does for Broadway boxing, and also mm-hmm. the accessibility and need that we have for the press notes, for the applications, handle thing right mm-hmm. there. And it is mm-hmm. our question that his dad was the last integral part of the great Mike Tyson. When Rooney no longer was in Mike Tyson's corner, no longer was Iron Mike Tyson, Mike Tyson. So we just send our condolences to Luke. And anybody else out there that we miss you, you're in our prayers, and we want to thank and see, Cincinnati Sea Wings is just, you're so great with that. We appreciate that, the way you always keep us abreast on that. He's our director of football. As you know, Muscles with Dusty is also associate vice president of boxing. Ladies and gentlemen, you just can't top this crew, and you can't top sports in depth. What you hear here, you won't hear anywhere else. It's first, it's foremost, it's informative. We bring you sports, but we also bring you history, and we give you food for thought. And when you leave sports in depth, not only do you know the scores of the game, you know who scored those same type of scores during the history of the game. We give you the scores, and we give you the history. Dr. Ali, Sports at Block Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio. It's mic on, lights off, and like I said, we just playing kind of blue. Okay, we have Wings. I just want to go with you one more time. What does it look like for the Jets? What's happening with this cornerback thing? We haven't got a cornerback, and we still haven't got an end. Jackson was the guy. What's happening here? What kind of season are we looking for? What's going to happen? We got Vic. But we need more than Vic here, Wings.
I definitely think John Itzik, he's being very careful because this is his year. You look at last season with all the cap problems and, you know, being a first-year GM. This year he owns, so he's going to go and be methodical. They're going to probably build through the draft, which is a little over a month away. They have a lot of cap space. I think that the Jets just didn't want to go crazy in free agency. You know, you have to – he didn't want to make the same mistakes of Tannenbaum. I think the Jets are going to do well this year. If they get him another wide receiver, they build up the defense with the cornerbacks. They got rid of DeCoste, which was a good thing because he couldn't – he had problems stopping the rush. I think the Jets are making a prediction of 10-6, maybe even 11-5. I think the Jets are going to be very formidable this upcoming season. With Vic in the mix, Eric Decker.
They're going to have to beat New England twice. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that this year.
I think they can. You look at last year, they could have beat them twice. I mean, it was a couple of bad calls up in New England. But I think the Jets should have been able to beat New England twice. They were just run over by Pittsburgh. I mean, definitely always a tough defense. But the Jets are going to be formidable this year. You'll see. I think they'll be ahead of the Giants. I mean, the Giants... They have a lot of holes to fill.
Wait, that Pittsburgh game, is that going to be here or on the road?
is going to be here. This is back-to-back years with Pittsburgh is coming here to MetLife Stadium.
Okay. So Pittsburgh, he will love that. Now, here's
and
the question.
In Tennessee again.
Well, you love that. Here's the question, though. How good is Revis? I mean, he made All-Pro last year. He came back. There could be, you know, Adrian and Jump Shot. There could be the fact that New England has damaged goods.
Not necessarily. I still think Revis is a reputable cornerback. He's still up there in the top three. I even put him probably at the best, if not even that, two at worst.
Yeah.
I think he's going to make a statement coming back to play the Jets. But as you know,
okay,
the business
okay,
aspect
so
of it.
In other words, then, no question, going to New England is just good for his psyche, good for his mentality, and is going to make him push himself at his high as possible level. No question, then you're saying.
Oh, no doubt about it. He had to get out of down there in Tampa. I mean, it was just he didn't belong down there. I mean, it was just a situation that went sour business-wise between him and the Jets. And, you know, I don't fault him for making as much money as he can. he may end up like Deion Sanders, you know, one year playing on this team, the next year playing on this team. You never know. But I still think that the days of Brady and Belichick winning a Super Bowl are over.
Wow.
Under that. I don't see it. They'll be relevant. They've always won. I mean, they're both going to be, I believe, probably first ballot Hall of Famers, or at least Belichick. You know, the only time they didn't win the division is when Brady got hurt. So what does that tell you about that team? He always seems to make it work.
I remember the year they were 11-5 and didn't make the playoffs. But last year, I think, showed definitely his tremendous ability as a coach, his ability to make the adjustments, his ability to use and get the max out of the players. Now, what was the real source? Really, there's a different story behind Wes Walker leaving. What's the rumors, as Tim Stimley said, what's the rumors you heard that caused the departure of Wes Walker?
I mean, I just think that it was they couldn't come to terms on the contract. That's what sets the NFL apart from a lot of the other sports. One, the longevity of a person's career. Two, the contracts. A lot of it's not guaranteed. The biggest thing that's guaranteed really is the signing bonus, because the teams can you know, they could just about cut you at any time. I mean, even with DeSean Jackson, wherever he lands, the team is going to have to pay $6 million of that salary, which is dead money. He was supposed to count towards the cap in Philadelphia for about $12 million for the 2014 season. So, Doc, real quick, just some news from around the league. Running back Ray Rice, unfortunately, was indicted by a New Jersey grand jury last Thursday for aggravated assault on his fiancée, now wife, Janae Palmer, who he married on this last Friday after being indicted. But I look to see that probably wiggle its way through the court, if not totally dropped, probably drop down to maybe disorderly conduct, something like that. And also the annual NFL owners meetings took place this past weekend down in the Sunshine State. A couple of rule changes came about. The biggest was the replay rule, where now the referees can contact the NFL officiating command, which is in New York, which will they will automatically review all replays after the call has been challenged. That was the rule proposal number 9, which passed. Now, if a play is challenged, the officiating command center, which is in New York, will review it, talk to the referee before he even reaches the replay booth, to kind of guide him what to specifically look for. But it still stands. It will ultimately still lie with the referee. Also, the clock will not be stopped on a sack. A sack that has been passed. So that's going to be that's going to change the game. Also, the uprights are going to go be moved 5 feet higher, from 10 feet to 15 feet, to kind of discourage the players from, you know, slamming the ball, dunking the ball over the uprights. I believe it was a Green Bay play, if I'm not mistaken, kind of dunked the ball and he knocked the uprights kind of off balance, and it kind of slowed the game down. Also, there was a college student, I can't remember exactly, was killed when the fan stormed the field. I'll update you on next week's show, where the fan stormed the field and pulled down a goalpost, and I think he was killed when the goalpost fell on top of him.
Wait, what's the hash marks? They were changed. What brought about that change for the hash marks, and why are they so intimate? One of the things that people talk about when they talk about the greatness of Jim Brown, when they had all the things they say in the hash marks, what's the big thing in the movement and adjustments of the hash marks?
I'll have to find that out. There was a big thing about that. I know they were looking to put a lot of cameras on the sidelines to help with the replay. So that was a big thing that came up in the owners meeting. I will update the show and the fans on next week's show in regards to that. I have to look deeper into that. But I know what you're talking about with that. I don't have the information in front of me. But it's a couple of changes, and they're looking to do something with the extra point. I think they want to move it back 25 yards or something like that. They didn't pass it.
They want to move it back 25 yards?
On the 25-yard line of the defense's 25-yard line.
For the one point. Wow.
I think the National Football League is going to experiment with that. They didn't pass it, but the league is going to experiment in the preseason with that. So look for that, those changes. Yeah.
You have the Jets preseason schedule yet? I mean, I know they're going to do the yearly game against the Giants.
They haven't.
Not yet.
They haven't.
Just call Coach in the morning and get that for us. Jump shot and Lady A too. What would be your all-time starting five team? Here's your team. Your starting five. What's your all-time starting five team? Who's the five guys you put out on the floor, Jump Shot?
I'm gonna start with Bill Russell.
Okay, Bill Russell in the hole. Okay. You know, but there are a lot of people who say there's something to be said for Kareem Abdul-Jabbar being the greatest center 20 years in the league. All-time scoring champion, a shot. I saw Larry Bird last night. Larry could be so funny. And they told a story about a timeout one time, and they were talking about the skyhook and, you know, the possibility of blocking it. And Larry Bird said, hey, two things happen. He makes it or he misses it. Nobody blocks it. And he was talking about he was out L.A. somewhere, and at halftime he told Larry he wanted to talk to him a minute. He said, you know, there had been a death threat on Larry, and did he want to go home? Did he want to stay in the stadium? And Larry said, no, he wanted to play. So Casey said, well, okay, why wouldn't the huddle, right? Why don't you go stand in the center of the court? You know, don't come to the huddle just But he's a great coach. But, okay, give me your five. I know two guys. Elgin Baylor is the forward, 27-13 lifetime numbers. He's the greatest forward all around the history game. And the backcourt, I got Oscar Palmer Robinson in the ball. I would imagine Jordan would be the other guard. And now my other guy up front, and I got a lot of guys I could go to, Larry Bird, the great Bob Pett, 26-16. But my other guy up front, the guy from the ABA, Dr. J. I've got Julius. I got Elton up front. I got Oscar and Mike on the ball. And in the middle, I'm kind of twisted. I could go Kareem. I can go Russell. I can go Chamberlain.
Chamberlain.
Chad Williams,
yeah.
Ted Williams once said that had you supplanted Chamberlain with Russell, you could have gained the same result, but Russell could have not have been the offensive player that Chamberlain was. Chamberlain and Russell, only two guys average 20 rebounds a game. I would lean toward the Dipper, but I think I could also lean toward Kareem. Let me see. I read a team. Was I reading a book? That's what it was. I said his team all time would be Julius and Moses up front. I believe Kareem in the hole, and him and Magic on the ball. The him, Magic, yeah. Kareem in the hole, Doc and Moses alone up front. But somebody countered with the team of Oscar, Mike on the ball, Elgin Baylor, Bill Russell, and Will Chamberlain up front. That's a team that's hard to argue with. That's hard to argue with. Russell and Dipper.
How about guys like Will George Gervin, a guy who doesn't even hardly get mentioned, Mailman Malone. You know, these are guys at the power forward position. Karl Malone has got to be certainly in the top two to three to play the game.
I don't buy that power forward, small forward, point guard. That you're a guard or you're a forward. Malone, as great as his numbers are, I tell you who the guy who would have been. And to me, I put ahead of Malone when he was on his game. He's one of the top five forwards of all time, Derek Coleman. He could handle the ball like a guard, shoot from the outside like a guard, take you inside like Oscar, and always, always get you the rebound. And he's left-handed, like a great fighter. And all his talent, if he had not gotten hurt, and to this day he was him and Kenny Anderson, the first Nets ever voted to a starting team, Derek Coleman was a great, great player. Injuries, it's funny you never hear that much about him. And also, he had British Knights. British Knights had a promotion. He was wearing British Knight sneakers. If I have a pair of autographs in. Anybody named Derek or a girl, Daryl Select, they would get a lifetime pair of his British Knight sneakers. But like I said, who's your team? Give me your five guys, and then later you come back with, give me your five guys. I'm going to go with Oscar, Mike. I got Julius, and I have Doc, Julius and Elgin. I'm definitely going to have Kareem and Chamberlain. And I'm going to put Russell on the team, too. Other guards, I'm going to go with Clyde, and I'm going to go with Isaiah as part of that team. If I do a 15-man team, I have to have Isaiah. I have to have Clyde. I have to have Earl. Got to have Ice. You know, Magic. Jerry West said something that was so profound. Irving never won a championship without Kareem. You know, and Irving had some great players. People always talk about Irving made the players better around him. He didn't have to do. And I love Irving, but he didn't have to do that much in Lady A. I mean, how much better were you going to make Worthy? How much better were you going to make Kareem? How much better were you going to make the Norm Nixon? Yeah, he had some twos that could play the game.
Did they get knocked off?
Huh? No, we're here. No, Adrian, you still here? 38? Okay, Jonesy, give me your five.
I'm going to stay Russell.
Russell, okay.
Taylor.
Okay.
Michael Jordan, of course.
Okay.
It gets tight after that. You know, I'm a big Dr. J fan. There's so many in that position who you can interchange with. I'm going to put Karl Malone in there.
Okay.
And, Oscar Robertson, no question.
So you got Oscar, Mike, you got Russell in the hole, you got Dr. J and Carmelina one on the front.
Right.
It was a good crew. Lady A, who were your starting five?
I
think we lost her.
She's in the studio.
When we were talking about the MVP candidates earlier, there was one other candidate who was trying to creep in that conversation. He just hurt last week, and that was Blake Griffin. Clippers.
I think a long shot and a dark horse. The Clippers would have to have a really final record, and I think people don't recognize and appreciate his basketball skills. A good point. I think a lot of people don't appreciate. I think for him to win, it's a year where they win 60-something games. LeBron's a little off. Kevin's a little off. But you're right. I think people really don't appreciate his skill. Mr. NFL, 411 C-Wings, what's your starting five?
I agree with the team you said, but I got to make room for Isaiah in there. I got to make room for Isaiah Thomas.
Okay, so you're going to start Isaiah and Michael?
Yes.
And you're going to put Kareem in, and you got Kareem or Chamberlain in the middle?
Chamberlain. I like Chamberlain
better. And you get Doc and Elgin up front. People from all around standpoint, Isaiah was a better all-around player than both Michael and Irving. And, Zeke was just a great, great player. We got a couple of famous niggas here, too. A great, great player. Like I'm saying, what I would do, you're going to give me a 12-man roster. Okay, Jabbar, Chamberlain, and Russell are on the team. Up front, I got Julius. I got Elgin. Julius, Elgin, Larry Bird, and probably Pettit and Barkley. So that gives me eight guys. I still got, now I got some other guards. So I've got the rest of the team. Isaiah's there. Ice is there. Rolls Royce backcourt is there. That's the Clyde and Earl Monroe. Got to find some place for the great Nate Archibald.
What about Gary Payton?
Gary's not in the league. I mean, to me, Gary is a Hall of Fame player. You know, he's like Al Kaline, but Al Kaline is not a Willie Mays, Hank Aaron, or Joe DiMaggio. Great player. But you know, when you talk about greats among the greats, Gary's not a Dr. J. He's not a Michael Jordan. He's not a Bird. Yeah, he's a great player. Yeah, but because Julius, Michael, Dipper, Baylor, Bird, they can change the course of a game. I don't think Peyton can change the course of a game. What do you think, Jump Shot? He's the kind of guy that I think he has to be part of the equation. I don't think he can be the equation.
Yeah, he could get in the school, but he won't be in the same class.
Yeah, exactly. You're right. He's going to be in Harvard, okay? But he's not at the top class at Harvard. Understand? I mean, being in Harvard means you're top of the line, but he's not going to be in the top class at Harvard.
He's in the conversation.
Oh, no question. But he's not a big part of the conversation.
Let's congratulate Joe Johnson, who scored his 17,000th point tonight against the Timberwolves.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Congratulations. Okay. With that, let's give Joe a little boost to Joe. Congratulations. And also, happy birthday once again to Walt Clyde Frazier, and that does it. We're looking for Lady H. She went in the studio. Get her pick on the thing. We've got a good little time and then keep going. Okay. We're talking so much about the Giants. What about the Giants? They lost Justin Tucker. How much of a hit is that to them, C-Wings, to lose a guy like Justin Tucker? And then in the class, Justin Tucker had an ad in the paper thanking the fans for their support and their time here, and he said he still is going to live here, his foundation. I think that's a class act. But how much does that hurt them losing Justin Tucker, if it hurts them at all, Cincinnati?
I mean, it's obvious that he's on the decline of his career, but as far as loss for the Giants, they lost a true leader in the locker room. I mean, he's definitely a true leader, a gentleman. He's declined in the last couple of years. Obviously, Father Time is undefeated, you know, injuries and stuff like that. But they definitely lost on the leadership side. I saw that happening. I just saw that happening. I mean, on the decline, he was getting up there in age. And I think that's also age and injury is what hurt the Giants a lot, too. They got a lot of holes. With Hakeem Nicks gone, they're going to need the wide receiver. Even in questions at running back. I mean, they've acquired a couple of pieces in the free agency there. But I think Jerry Reese is going to do like the Jets, build in the draft. And we see where the Knicks, the Jets, the Giants in the rebuilding stage.
Reese has shown to be an excellent GM. He's won two Super Bowls, one of the few GMs to win in his first year. So there's no question, if anybody can do it, it will be Jerry Reese.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, with the one-year extension with Tom Coughlin, I don't see him staying too much longer. But, you know, the Giants are a class act. Old money. They're not apt to fire their coaches so quickly. Sort of like the Pittsburgh Steelers seem to hold on to their coaches. Cincinnati with Marvin Lewis.
I think a similarity, too, is the Buffalo Bills. Leaving
him
a long time there. And you would have thought after losing one of the Super Bowls, he would have got bounced. He was up in the press box not so long ago. So, yeah, old money. They tell the story. Mr. No, Bob Chan told the great story about they're getting ready to make some cuts during the holidays. And the late Mr. Myra, who I got a chance to always talk to every now and then, and he said, Myra told him, hey, hold it, wait till after the holidays. He said, nobody should be without a job during the holidays. And just a sign of class act he was. And like you said, the class organization, no way get around that. You know, just the whole way what they're doing, the fact that they brought in Jerry Reese, worked in an organization, there was a lot of questions, does he have the experience, so forth and so on. But they brought him in. We're looking for Lady A to get in so we get some last words on boxing. Doc Sandy, Sports Net Blog Talk Radio on the Trust and Carver Network. It's Mike Online. So we've got Jump Shot Jonesy here and Cincinnati Sea Wings, Mr. Vail 411. We're talking basketball. We're talking football. We're talking baseball. As you know, the season opened tonight. The Dodgers opened the season. Tomorrow, the Mets will open their season. And on Tuesday, Derek Sanderson Jeter will end his great career, 20 years. And you know, the amazing thing, too, is 20 years of shortstop. That's the thing that you look at Willie Mays. Willie Mays was a center fielder, played the first base, but Willie Mays played center field for 20 years. Just a little tidbit I wanted to bring in that we keep talking here. We told you about the numbers that were Derek Jeter would be the last single-digit number retired by the Yankees because he's wearing number two. I remember the guy when I was coming up as a kid used to wear that number, the shortstop. He was the third base coach, he was a shortstop for the Yankees. Frank Cossetti and Phil was going to always say the Crow. And speaking about shortstop, once again, plugging my Trust and Guard Sports Net Internet Hall of Fame. And I just really can't put enough words, gratitude and to God. I was looking at a little helmet I had, and I grabbed it, and I saw some signatures on it. And it was Phil Rizzuto, the last Yankee shortstop to win MVP, and Derek Jeter. Phil Rizzuto may be the only Yankee shortstop that ever won the MVP. That I'm thinking about it. Phil Rizzuto may be the only Yankee shortstop that ever won the MVP. Jeter, as we thought a few years ago, had a shot at it, that new batting title, but he came up short. But on that little helmet is number 12. Phil Rizzuto, no, number 10. Number 10. Rizzuto was number 10, and Derek Jeter number 2. Yankees had a tendency of passing numbers off from position to position. Barrow wore the same number 8 that Bill Dickey wore, and Kubek wore the same number 10 that was worn by Turuzulu at shortstop. So they had a little thing of pinning them. Mickey Mantle first came up wearing number 6, and then he finally wore wearing number 7. There's a guy now, I'll have to look it up every next week. There's a guy who wore both at one time, Babe Ruth's number 3 and Mickey Mantle's number 7. Yeah. Dr. Sandy, sports
the
blog.
The scooter.
Was that? Yeah.
The
yeah.
Scooter. And holy
the
cow.
Holy cow. It was just a great, I remember, and it was a whole different time period. It's a game, and I'm walking over to the different press box than it'll have now. You can see, and I'm walking over maybe to get a hot dog or soda, and Scooter had a button on, "Kiss me, I'm Italian." And those guys, you could run in there and say hi to them. It was a whole different attitude. And I went in there, and I gave Scooter a kiss. And, holy cow, why are he kissing me? You know what I mean? They all laughing because he had this thing, but "Kiss me, I'm Italian." I ran in there and said, "Holy cow, why are he kissing me?" A great guy. And the thing about Rizzuto, too, Rizzuto was one of the guys that was for the integration of baseball. One of the guys that said he had no problem playing with black baseball players. Great shortstop, great Yankee. And I found out, it's amazing, you learn these things. His first job wasn't in the broadcast booth as a Yankee. It was at the Brooklyn on the Brooklyn Dodger Network. The pitch I would pitch him interviewing Roy Campanella, the first African-American to win 3 MVPs and considered by many to be the greatest catcher of all time. And it was said, had he not gotten in that accident, he would have definitely won 4 MVPs. And Art Russ Jr., my mentor, the late, great Art Russ Jr., told me that he had just interviewed Camp. Camp came over to Small Paradise to do Art's show. And he told Art, "Wouldn't do this for anybody else, you, baby." His Cadillac was in the shop, and he had a loaner car. Man, he skid and had that accident. Number 39, that was retired by the Dodgers. Boy, came from number 39, and great player. And the first African-American to win 3 MVP awards, won in 51, 53, and 55. The second black player to win MVP award, because the first was Jack Wilmslow Robinson in 1949. Doc Stanley spoke at Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. And it's not your imagination. It's Mike Owens. Lights off. The jump shot artist from the top of the key. And instead of 411, Doc Stanley spoke at Blog Talk Radio on the Trust in God Radio Network. And we're just doing a little mic on Lights Off Sports. Another few minutes we'll be gone, but we're glad that you're joining us here. We'll just take this for you. This was the last number one hit across the board for the Temptations. It was the last song that Eddie Kendrick would be. And it was the first across the board number one record, R&B, rock. That was My Girl. Eddie left the group after that. Some of the speculations why he left, because they were also kicking Paul Williams out, his friend Paul Williams out, and Eddie's kind of rebellious. But the great Eddie Kendricks, got a chance to see Eddie. He was at the Ali Shavers fight, and I remember, "Well, hey, Eddie, how you doing?" Ali brought them all out. What a Muhammad Ali fight, they were all there. Fox Stanley Sports, the Blog Talk Radio, the Trust and Guard Network. Okay, gentlemen, I guess we want to slide on out here. It's about 12:15 with another 2 minutes. Your mic on, lights off. Let you know what happened. Kentucky, a big, big win today. UConn also won. They're going down there.
Yeah, buddy.
Going down to the Final Four. Florida will be there. John Calipari has his team pose to another shot at a NCAA championship. The Knicks. Winners. Knicks now a game out of that last playoff spot. Tiger Woods doesn't know what's going to happen now with that back of his. As we said, the photo collage. We salute Derek Sanderson Jeter, his 20th and last season.
input. But, you know, let me say, he's definitely in the running for the longest amount of years played as a Yankee, too. Mantle didn't play 20 years, neither did DiMaggio. So we got to check into that. Catalog, once again, there's Michael Vick, there's Mark Sanchez. They switch teams, quarterbacks now of their respective other teams, Sanchez with the Eagles and now Vick with the Jets, a picture of the great Derek Sanderson, Jeter Floyd, Pretty Boy Mayweather, who's added to the undercard of that pay-per-view fight. Some really good other people on that card now. You got the Broner fight on there. You have Mayor Khan fight on there. That's going to be really good. We salute Walt Clyde Frazier, greatest all-around guard ever played in New York City and the second greatest all-around. The only one you can mention in the same breath with Oscar Robertson, as far as I'm concerned, from all-around brilliance, able to shoot, rebound, pass, and play defense. The picture also will show Muhammad Ali and Joe Frazier. March will end. It's the month, March 8, 1971. Ali Frazier won greatest fight in the history of mankind. I remember that fight was when you walk down the streets, any place in the city, any place in the world, you turn to somebody and say, who is going to win the fight? They had an opinion. Jew, Gentile, Protestant, Catholic, Muslim, woman, even dogs were, okay, it must mean Ali. Everybody had an opinion on who was going to win that fight. And it was a tremendous moment. Leroy Neiman said there's the night of nights, the great Leroy Neiman. And so we have a picture of Ali and Joe Frazier. We also have a picture. Esteban de Jesus, the first man ever to beat the legendary, the incomparable Roberto Duran. Have a picture of Duran. And our colleague have a picture of Harold, double by Howard Weston Jr., and Mr. NFL 411, along with the doctor, when we went up to visit WWRL Radio. And other ensuing pictures, take a look at the collage. You Should Like It is a monologue of four ladies as we close out the month of Women's Month. Dorothy Height, the pioneer in the civil rights movement. Shirley Chisholm, the first African-American to run for president. Toni Morrison, enough said, as a writer. And we also have Rosa
and
Fox.
And, Doc, don't forget Clyde Frazier's, when we ate there during Super Bowl week, not only was he a great player, but he gives out a great hamburger. Woof.
Great hamburger, right. And, you know, Clyde, too, was we had Clyde. I should have done some of that interview. If I could find it. No, we can run now. But Frazier was a hell of a quarterback. He talked about how Johnny Unitas was his idol. And, you know, we may try to find some of that here. We can hold on a few more minutes. Let me see. Maybe we can get some interview and close out.
Do you think Phil may ask him to come on to the staff? Do you think that's a possibility?
It's ironic that you say that because they had a I pulled the article out where they said they were talking about maybe with Phil coming in now that there's a possibility that he will bring some of the people from his time span. And one of the things was Rob Raceman, who did a nice speech years ago. We talked about Badlands and Borkin and his sidekick, Doc Stanley. And Raceman talked about maybe the possibility of Clyde getting a position now that Jackson is the president of the Knicks. So it's just something we'll see how that works out as the as time goes on. But, yeah, that was one of the things that they talked about, the possibility of Clyde getting an executive position, moving from the broadcast booth into an executive area. So time will tell. I mean, there's nobody that's represented the Knicks any better. Apple Pro, along with his attire, just been a class act and a great player. Mark Breland, Walt Frazier, I'm trying to think of somebody else. I've never heard them raise their voice. I've never heard Mark Breland or Walt Frazier ever raise their voice. Never. You know, I never heard them scream or yell. And the thing about Clyde that was so great was that Clyde was always above the action. He was they talked about, excuse me, Jim, was that no matter how intense the action was, you could never tell if the Knicks were up by 10 or down by 3 because Clyde was always the essence of cool, always the essence of cool, always the guy
Just a great player. Just a great player. I believe we do have this Wolfridge interview, if I can find it, and we'll probably try to close out with that on my thing here. Gentlemen, give me a little time for a little music. Don't move here. And let's just hold tight. Doc Sandy, Sports at Blog Talk Radio on the Touch and Guard Radio Network. I'll be back. You don't have to do this. Don't have to beg. Don't have to beg. I'll be back.
I know you want to leave me.
I thought I'd be back.
I refuse to let you go. If I have to beg, please, for your sympathy, I don't mind. Don't you mean that much to me?
For that, Jonesy, we're going to run here. We're going to run on out. One more time, Jonesy, your prediction on who's going to win this whole thing now? Okay. Jonesy is going to go to Florida. And
Doc, I'm here.
Hey, Wings. Oh, yeah, Jonesy, okay, who's your pick for winning the whole thing? One more time.
Florida.
Florida, okay. Well, with that, Doc Stanley, Sportsnet, Blog Talk Radio, on the Touch and Guard Radio Network. Jump Shot Jonesy, he's got Florida winning. He's just the Knicks and the Nets both making the playoffs, but not the Knicks going too far. They have to play Indiana or Miami. Jump Shot. We're back here next week, 9:30 Sports Desk, Rock Talk Radio on the Trust and Guard Radio Network. Jonesy, any last words before you leave us?
Well, I just want to give a shout out to the because it's Women's History Month. You know, I lost my mom
a few weeks ago, as you know, and she's definitely one of my heroines. So as we honor women in this Women's History Month, you know, I'd like to give a shout out to my, you know, in memoriam to my mother, Janetta Jones, and also a shout out certainly to one of the greatest women alive and my significant other, my spouse, Mrs. Jacqueline Jones.
We'll also say that Mrs. Jacqueline Jones is a very lucky lady to be the wife of Mr. Jones. Jump shot from the top of the key, boy. Jones, you can take it off the dribble, just slam you. And when you think you got him, there he is, a four-pointer. Thanks for that jump shot. See you next week, baby.
Okay, thanks, Doc. Same to you.
Okay. Hey, Doc Stanley, sporting the Blog Talk Radio on the Truth and Guardian Network. We're going to run now. Leave your three thoughts, though. Live your life today as if you have to stand before God tomorrow. Life's most persistent, most urgent question is, what are you doing for us? That's Dr. Martin Luther King, Jr. Service to others is rent you pay for your room here on earth. That's Muhammad Ali. Here's another one Dr. King said. Forgiveness is not a casual act. It's a permanent state of mind. Dr. Kelly, last thing we say, trust in God.
All over town and just to see what I could find. Every now and then I'd find some company, but every kiss, tempo, breathy. I try to tell myself that it was just a game. I'd run again to try and ease that lonely pain. No matter where I traveled, there I'd be, stuck in those walls of skin called me. And I was just a running to find something true. And I'd just be running with nothing to prove. And I kept on running and nothing to show. They all saw me running and said, there he goes. You caught my eye one day while I was on a run. Somehow you made me feel my life had just begun. I seen the last of all my roaming days, 'cause I knew from you I'd never run away. Now you've got me running to get home to you. And my heart keeps running when I think of things you do. And I won't be running to no one else no more. They all see me running. Say that's love for sure. Yeah. I'm not hesitating, no. As soon as work is done, yeah. Fast as my leg can carry me, yeah. Yeah. Life ain't complicated, oh no. You've got only one heart, one joy. Watching people running all around, chasing after things that'll just run them down. Life is so much better if they change their ways. I wish I could tell them, but you know I can't stay.